Restaurant Unstoppable, episode 1058 with Greg Kahn.
So for me, the business is all about showing care. So whether it's in the preparation of food, the cleaning of dishes, or our interactions with our guests, I think that if people feel cared for, they come back.
Are you ready for it factors, success stories, failures, and bombs of restaurant industry knowledge? Then join Eric Cacciatore and today's incredible guest as they share what it takes to become unstoppable.
This episode made possible by Restaurant Technologies, Inc. RTI's Total Oil Management automates your entire cooking oil process. With Total Oil Management, you get dependable fresh bulk cooking oil delivery, filtration plus oil usage monitoring and reporting, easy oil disposal, use cooking oil pickup and recycling, and say goodbye to messy, dangerous restaurant rendering tanks. Yuck. RTI's end-to-end cooking oil system helps you manage your used cooking oil disposal, storage, collection, and recycling conveniently, safely, and cleanly with no upfront cost. Restaurant Technologies, Inc. is always on, so you don't have to be. To learn more, head to RTI-Inc.com and let them know Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast sent you their way. This episode is brought to you by Restaurant Systems Pro, and they are launching their first time ever 60-day pilot program. This is something that's never been done before. This 60-day event is at no cost to you, but it's not for everyone. Fred Langley, CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro, will be leading a group of restaurateurs through the Restaurant System Pro software and setting up the systems for your restaurants. Fred will teach you recipe costing cards, guidance in your books for accounting, cash control, sales forecasting, checklist, budgeting for the entire year, scheduling for profit, more butts and seats, and that's not it. If you are interested in this, head over to www.restaurantunstoppable.com/RSP. That's RSP for Restaurant Systems Pro. www.restaurantunstoppable.com/RSP. This episode brought to you by Owner.com. Owner.com is the leading all-in-one platform for restaurant marketing. Owner.com powers everything from SEO-optimized websites, direct online ordering, automated email and text marketing, built-in loyalty programs, zero commission delivery, and branded mobile apps for your restaurant that's integrated right into your POS. With Owner.com, there's no contract, no hidden fees, and nothing to lose. Join thousands of restaurant owners using Owner.com to grow direct online sales, save thousands in third-party fees, and simplify their online ordering presence all in one. Book a free demo today at owner.com/unstoppable and see why owner.com is the number one rated restaurant marketing software. Imagine you had an employee who never called out, kept inventory in line, could spit out sales and cost data at a moment's notice, and saved you hours of work. You'd want to hire that person, right? Margin Edge is the boost in efficiency you need and doesn't add to your labor cost. Margin Edge is a complete restaurant management software that allows you to seamlessly manage all aspects of your business from one central location. With Margin Edge, you can track food costs in real time, make inventory faster and less tedious, easily cost out your recipes, and get a daily P&L so you always know where you stand. Visit marginedge.com/unstoppable to learn more and to get a free monthly restaurant sales report packed with exclusive industry trends, data, and insights. Once more, that's marginedge, marginedge.com/unstoppable. With excitement, allow me to introduce to you today's guest, owner of Gregorio's Trattoria, Greg Kahn. My man, are you feeling unstoppable today?
I am.
Dude, I've had a blast getting to know you the past 3 days. I don't always get that privilege to hang out with my guests for 3 days and to go into all their restaurants and to experience your restaurant from like three different perspectives, you know? So you hosted just now the Restaurant Systems Pro quarterly elite group mastermind and meetup. Is that the correct terminology
that you guys use? Correct. That is correct. Yes.
Yeah. What was that like?
So it was a great experience, you know, to get a group of restaurant owners from around the country that aren't your competitors to come in and give you real honest feedback about what you're doing and also to see the new a lot of the great things that Fred and Gino and all the people at RSP, Brittany and the people there are doing to really help us to better understand our numbers and to manage our numbers is awesome.
And I love what you guys do with the meetup, and it's something that's just reserved for the top performers at Restaurant Systems Pro, correct? And that gets, it's a quarterly meetup. You take people through your restaurants. Fred hosts and kind of updates you guys on the new product rollouts, features, and things like that. But the coolest part, in my opinion, about these meetups is that the hosts kind of gets the open themselves to get a little like roasted, you know, like give me some constructive criticism.
Yeah.
Which is, what was that like?
So, you know, so in our business, we're so used to getting criticism, right? I mean, from all other all kinds of places, and a lot of it you kind of brush off, like, you know, oh, if they knew what I, you know, they don't know the restaurant business, you know. Whatever.
Guests are telling us every day,
every day, you know, so everybody that's ever been to a restaurant or watched a Gordon Ramsay show thinks that they know how to run a restaurant. Right. When, you know, here you're getting feedback from people that really know, people that have been doing it for 35 years,
millionaires
that are super
in the
successful
business.
Yeah, people that have, you know, many locations, make a lot of money, you know, and so to hear, to get their feedback is really something I'm grateful for. You know, didn't have, you know, no, you know, there's no agenda there.
Right. And you can tell the feedback is backed with love. It's not like it comes from like a snooty nose up place. It's like, oh, like little details that you just over time, they just, they drift. Right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. These aren't, you know, these aren't Yelp reviews. I mean, these are people that, they've been through it. There's not anybody that hasn't, you know, had a problem, made a mistake, done something wrong in their restaurant that they've learned from and, you know, really want to share it. And that's what's great about getting around with people that are from other parts of the country, because they're not your competitors. They have no, you know, they don't
have nothing to hide.
They have nothing to hide and they really have nothing to gain.
Right.
You know, they're just sharing it out of the kindness of their heart, and it's greatly appreciated.
I think the coolest part I think this is the fourth meetup I've been to now, is that you guys are so good at taking it on the chin, you know? Like, it's like literally a round circle, like you're in the center, everyone's going around telling you things that they see, and no matter where I've been, no matter who was hosting that time, there's such poise, and everyone just takes the criticism, and they can tell that they're excited to hear it, you know? It's cool.
You know, it is cool. It's really great. And, you know, I have three locations now and a fourth one coming. And, you know, for me to get out and go and be a part of a group that's having lunch or dinner in our places is a big deal, too, because I usually see it from the perspective of, you know, I walk in the back door, you know, to walk in the front door and sit down like a guest and have that experience. A lot of the things that they mentioned, I saw when I sat down.
Right.
You don't see it when you walk in. You know, I would, you know, the restaurant owners, I would suggest walk through your front door.
For sure.
Sit down and
sit in every seat.
Let your staff take care of you.
Yeah, for sure. All right. This was fun to get into, but we still haven't even shared your success quote or mantra. So let's get that motivational, inspirational ball rolling with a success quote or mantra. What do you got for us?
So for me, I'll share, you know, really what our mission statement is. So at Gregorio's, our mission is to provide a delightful guest experience by showing how much we care. And so for me, the business is all about showing care. So whether it's in the preparation of food, the cleaning of dishes, or our interactions with our guests, I think that if people feel cared for, they come back.
Yeah. How do you show people you care?
Well, there's so many ways to show it. You know, it could be, you know, just a little something extra, remembering their name, remembering their special requests or dietary needs, or if they have a dietary need that you can't meet. You know, where we are, we're fortunate enough to be in a shopping center where there's grocery stores and other places, so that if there's a need that we can't meet within our four walls, you know, I'll go get whatever it is that they need, you know. So just to try to go, you know, go above and beyond.
Right.
I think that if you show you care, you can overcome a burnt piece of chicken. You know what I mean?
Just talking to Matt Burnaby yesterday, the founder of Urban Hot Dog. Thank you for letting us record in one of your locations, by the way.
Of course.
And we were talking about going the extra mile, right? And like, what is that, like that second mile of service look like? And that's what he learned when he was with Chick-fil-A. And we were talking about just last night, unreasonable hospitality. And I think it's that kind of language, this like what is expected. Do what's unreasonable. Do what's unexpected. Do what no one would ever expect you to do to make sure that they're being cared for.
Absolutely.
Right?
And to me, that's what with the whole thing, you know, for us, we're neighborhood restaurants. We operate in neighborhood shopping centers. We're part of communities. So there's churches, schools, synagogues, you know, charitable organizations, and we support them. My feeling is that I don't say no, which doesn't mean that I necessarily say yes. I might, you know, there might be some modifiers or whatever things that we can't do. But I feel like no is always the end of a conversation, and I don't want to end a relationship with a guest. So we do everything we can to accommodate.
Yeah. Now you're reminding me of Cameron Mitchell, and what he says is yes is the answer. What's the question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if
you heard that book.
I have, you know, so one of my dear friends and mentors who passed away, Martin Alcocer, he was with us. We met at a place where we used to work together, and, you know, by fate, he left and I left, and he was able to come back with us, and he was supposed to be our general manager. He was our general manager when we opened here in our second location, and was shortly after diagnosed pancreatic cancer. Ugh. Was disaster, died. You know, he's my godfather and my son, a man that I love, but he always said the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, yes is the answer. What is the question?
Mm.
You know, and that's kind of what we do.
Yeah, man. So where does it make sense to start sharing your story? Bring us to the beginning. You grew up in the, are you from this area?
So I grew up in this area. If I lived in this shopping center, I would have gone to all the same schools.
We're currently in Potomac, Maryland.
This is home. Growing up, my dad had a business, a paper business called Con Paper Company. It was around for 50 something years. They sold pizza boxes and, you know, toilet tissue, straws, napkins, plates, all, you know, for restaurants as well as institutional food service. And, you know, as a result of that, I was around a lot of restaurant people. Always knew that I wanted to have my own business. I worked for my dad for a while. I worked in sales. I did a lot of different things, but it wasn't something I was passionate about. I really prefer, you know, the restaurant environment has always been fun for me. And so at some point, I had left my dad's company. I was actually selling credit card processing at the time that I did this. And I kind of looked around and thought, you know, who has a life that I want? Who do I, you know? So, like, you know, to me, it's like, who is my role model? Where do I want to go? And
how old are you when you're having this conversation with yourself?
So, I was in my 20s.
I'm
47 now. I can't remember exactly. You know, I was married, and, you know, I had decided that I wanted to try my own business. I started trying some email marketing. I did stupid, you know, things. I didn't really know what I was doing, but
the only way to find out is just to take stabs in the dark and see what, you know, where you catch me.
Well, you know, I hope that's not the only way to find out.
That's one of the ways, you know.
But that's like, how that's
you never
how I
know
did
until
it.
You know. You got to just try things.
So I looked and I found somebody that I really looked up to, and I went to him and I said, you know, I called him and asked if he would meet with me. He did, and I said, "Will you help me to learn the restaurant business?" And he said, "Oh, thank God! I thought you were going to try and sell me credit card processing." So I went to work. I went to work for them, and I did that for a few years, you know. And it was the greatest experience of my life. My feeling is that it was so much better for me than college. I did college. I didn't finish, but I don't. You know, I went to college for a long time. I was in and out of college for a long, and you know that never, you know, the scholastic route was not for me, especially now when you look at how much college costs and all that stuff, you know, how much better off would I be with $100,000 and 5 years of work experience than no work experience and $100,000 in debt?
I mean, if you're looking to get in the restaurant industry, I do not think school is the way to go. I mean, you can learn so much on the ground, just working for people, being curious, asking questions. Most importantly, you can find out if you don't like it, which there's only a few of people, a special breed of people who truly are capable of doing this work in the sense that they can bear it, you know, and enjoy it. Like, figure that out before you go into debt.
I think a lot of it's just like, you know, working out, which I'm not an expert on working out. I've never done it. But the, you know, it's really hard when you start.
Yeah.
And then you build a habit, and then you see success, and then you feel really good about what you've done. I think a lot of people, they start and they don't like it,
right?
And they try to find a way out
without seeing any results.
Without seeing any results, so you know the results don't come. You don't unlock your door. I mean, my experience has been, maybe some people do, but you don't. You know, my experience is you don't unlock your door and suddenly have, you know, thousands of customers walking through your door.
No, it takes years of embracing the suck, developing relationships, fine tuning, finding ways to get better here, there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Taking feedback.
Right.
So for me, it's been about, you know, the day that we opened, you know, taking feedback. People, you know, to show care, we talked about showing care. It's about people feeling like they're heard. So you need to listen to them, you know. So it's not just, you know, what can I do to make it right? You have to listen first.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, the answer might be that you're going to comp their dinner tonight and send them a, you know, a coupon or a discount or a credit for a future order. But you can't just offer that right off the bat.
No.
And my, you know, my feeling, you know, you have
first to. First seek to understand.
Yep. You have to listen. When they feel heard, I mean, my experience is most people, they didn't call to complain for the discount. They didn't want a discount. You know, they wanted what they ordered the way that they wanted it.
Right. They want justification.
Right. So they just want to feel heard. Yeah. And so, you know, we listen, we hear them. And, sometimes it's they don't like it the way that we did it. And that's the way that we do it.
Mm.
And so, you know, you can tell them ways that they can modify their order. Right. So, you know, like a pizza, we sell, you know, a fair amount of pizza. You can. You know, some people want it thin and crispy. Some people don't. Yeah. You know, people have different preferences, light cheese or whatever. So you say, hey, listen, that's the way we make it. Now, a lot of that comes from Restaurant Systems Pro. You have to make it the same way every time, right? So otherwise,
it's all portioned up.
It's all. So right. if you don't make it the same way every time, you can't make those adjustments. But it's just about listening to people, understanding what they're looking for, and doing your best to make it the way that they want it. And they know that you're doing your best to make it the way that they want it. I think of like the kind of, I'm going to call them like nouveau cuisine, where you've got, you know, this, which is, they're selling something different than what we're selling. They're selling like food as art.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like.
I think there's a place for that.
I do too.
There's market. I mean, there's one thing I've learned is that there is no right way. There's just the right way for you in the target market you're going after. And if you can find that connection, if you can do what you want to do and there's a market for it and you're good at it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't ever get – I mean, I'm so easy to please, man. Like, I just want to, like – I've never got into that food as art type.
So I have. I've done – I mean, I don't do it in our places.
Yeah.
I mean, we're neighborhood restaurants, and but I do like that. Yeah. I like to go –
I mean, I get it. You know, it's just not – I don't get excited.
I do
about
like
it.
To see, like, you know, flavors I've never heard of before,
right.
You know.
Right.
But it's not something that I – you know, it's not where you go three times a week.
Yeah, so right. back to your story. I'm curious. You said something that I've been I wanted to pull back layers on. You said when you were thinking about your life and the life you wanted, and where would you want to be? How would you want to spend your life? Do you remember saying that?
Oh, absolutely.
What was the vision?
Like, so
what was the life you wanted? What did you think the restaurant industry was? What was your perception of what you were getting into?
So I'm constantly doing. You know, so for me at that time I had an outside sales job, and I was driving from place to place and. Getting a lot of rejection,
yeah,
you know,
especially the restaurant owners, right? Hardest so, people to sell to.
So, you know, you think you have an appointment with somebody, you show up and they had somebody else not show up. And anyway, so there was a lot of stuff. I didn't like that. For me, at that time in my life, being alone in my car was a bad place. You know, we didn't have great podcasts like we do now, you know? So,
just books on tape.
Yeah. Well, I don't even remember what but I spent a lot of time kind of, you know, in my head at that time.
Yeah.
And I still do. I'm constantly, you know, thinking of the future. I mean,
right.
I'm not, you know, so I'm always there. So I just really thought that I wanted to have a place that I could go that was a comfortable place for me to be. And I've always loved food and presenting food and to people. And I looked at this guy, you know, who really seemed to be having a great time at it.
Who was this guy?
His name is Jimmy Fragianis. He had restaurants called Mama Lucia. You know, I went to work for him. You know, he was always really great to me. And eventually, you know, there's a whole long story in there, but, you know, we left. You know, my father-in-law had cancer. My wife's from Massachusetts. She felt like she needed to be with him. He wanted to partner in a restaurant in Northern Virginia, in Reston, which is now our Reston location, with us, or with me, with my
this
dad.
This is before you moved.
This is before we moved. This is long ago. I mean, this is, you know, and so I left to go support my wife, right? So to kind of be there for her dad. It turns out, you know, so when we lived here and she was traveling up there, you know, once a month for a weekend, she was staying with her parents and she was spending a lot of time with them. And then once we moved up there, you know, you'd go meet for dinner. We didn't really, it was different. You know, I think, and I didn't like it. I mean, I love Boston, but I don't like the winter in Boston, you know?
I don't think anybody's going to argue with
you know?
That one.
So, I mean, it's not, and you know, you think it's the snow. For me, it wasn't. It gets really dark really early in the afternoon, you know? So anyway, that's all beside the point.
Back
really.
To going to work for this gentleman, Jimmy, was it Fragionis?
Fragionis.
So, you said it was the way he was. There was something about him that drew you
in. Yeah, something about me.
Were you looking at other restaurants? Like when you were like trying to, you had this internal battle of like, I don't know if I want to do what I'm currently doing.
Not at all.
There's an appeal to the restaurant industry. Were you looking at multiple restaurants that you think you'd want to get involved with, or was it just this one?
No. So I knew him. He was, you know, my dad's customer. My dad helped Jimmy a lot, so he was close with our family. He was close with our family at that time, and so you know, I just reached out.
What year was this?
God, what year is it now? 2024.
2024.
So this would have been.
How old were you?
I wasn't 30. I mean,
I was about 20 years ago.
So probably 21, 22 years ago, somewhere in there. I'm really bad at that. So like, I don't acknowledge the passing years.
How long
I don't
did
like
you work
that.
With them before? When did you open your first
Gregorio's? I left. So I was with him for, I don't know, less than 3 years. And then my dad sold his business in 2006. We had moved to Boston. We were supposed to
back to Boston.
so we started where, you know, so he was going to open this restaurant in Reston. Yeah. I was going to be the partner. And I was really going to be a minority partner, right? And as we made it a little further along, that didn't quite fit where I wanted to go, right? That kind of still felt like employee to me, and that kind of helped me make that decision to go
to
with
Boston.
My wife to be near her family. And it was an easy way for me to do it.
And this is after 3 years,
right, well,
or right around the,
yeah,
around
right
the
around
three, three-year
so
mark.
For me, it would have been, looking back, I wish that I was, you know, I don't know if you can say man enough in 2024. But you know,
Person enough.
I wish that I was
human enough.
Strong enough.
Yeah.
To have that conversation with him then, I didn't. You know, I kind of hid behind my sick father-in-law, which is soft and weak and, you know.
Right.
But
it was an excuse.
It was an excuse. And
yeah.
And I left. And you know, long story short, they opened that Reston restaurant without me, you know, with other guys. And my dad sold his business and we were looking to buy a restaurant together. My dad is my partner, you know, my dad's not really active in
financial,
but
silent partner.
He's not active in the, he's not silent.
Okay.
He's not
let's,
silent.
Let's make sure. About,
right. No,
let's
he's
get
not
that
silent,
clear.
But he's not really active in the management or operation of the restaurant. He does, you know, he does a lot of helping me with negotiation. So he was a supplier,
right?
So he does a lot with negotiating prices. He also does a lot with checking invoices, making sure that what was quoted is what we received, and all this kind of stuff that RSP does a lot of that too. My dad does not like to get the daily. I mean, gets the daily email, but he really likes to go invoice by invoice, and you know, he digs through all of our.
Doesn't trust the technology.
You know,
yet.
I don't know that it's that he doesn't trust the technology. I think part of it, and I don't know that he's ever going to see this or listen to it, but I think part of it is it gives him his routine, you know, just like I love my routine, and that's why, you know, the restaurant business for me was much better than being outside and going to different places. Here, I'm here, and I get, you know, my guests come in, and you know, I see people 3, 4, 5 times a week.
Yeah,
I get, but it's different. Every day is.
There's something to be said about routine. It's very powerful. I don't know if you've ever studied habit, or read like the Atomic Habit or the Power of Habit. It's just, habit is so much influenced by your physical surrounding. And when you have a routine and when your physical, if you can make your physical surrounding consistent, it's so much easier to develop a routine and process and just get into a flow. What's one of the biggest reasons why I'm trying to get into an RV? Because I want to, like, I have this like working knowledge or this working idea that I can create mobile routine. You know, like, as long as I can keep my day the same, I can get into a routine. What are your thoughts? Like, you know, what are
I love that because, yeah, yeah, you know, for me, you know, I have my routine and yeah, I don't like to get out of my routine. You know, so the guys were just here from Restaurant Systems Pro. I was so happy to have them here because the now I've missed the last two meetings, but it's, you know, it's quarterly and I've been in it for about a year. So I did two of the last four, and the two that I went to, you know, you fly, you get to a hotel. It's just, I don't like it. I like to be here. You know, some people, right, they travel for work. They go all over the world, and they love what they do, and
guilty,
and
it's,
and they love to get around into different places. I like to go to the same places.
Yeah, yeah, you know? I hear that. There's something to be said about that. I do envy that. Like, I wish I could have best of both worlds, you know? But so I do want to go back to your time working with Jimmy. What were the biggest lessons he taught you? I mean, 3 years. You had 3 years working with him. You go to Boston. How long were you in Boston?
About 2 years.
2 years. So 5 years after starting with Jimmy, you come back, and that's when you partner.
Right. So that's when we came back, and we bought an existing restaurant.
So you're 33, 34 years old at this time?
Yeah.
How long have you had Gregory's?
32, 33. So we've had Gregorio's now. So we bought the existing restaurant, which was Mama Lucia of Reston, October of 2008.
Okay.
And then we later converted it to Gregorio's. And then when we opened here in Potomac is home.
Yeah.
Right? So it's the greatest thing in the world is to have a restaurant that's where you grew up.
Absolutely.
I mean, my fourth grade teacher comes in here. My third grade teacher, right, comes in here. I've met their families. I mean,
that's been a big lesson.
It's really
for me.
Cool.
Go open a restaurant where you have roots. And if you, and sometimes you have a vision for a restaurant, a dream for a restaurant that's not perfect for the demographic you grew up in, go someplace and set new roots and just get involved with the community and maybe go work for a couple other restaurateurs and get to know people.
Yeah.
But you need to have relationships.
Absolutely.
You know,
relationships are great.
Yeah.
You know, for me, you know, the food is kind of, the food is a huge, I mean, we sell food, right?
Yeah.
But it's to me, it's about serving the food that my guests want to eat and not so much
it's about creating
what I
want
to present them, right? So, you know, if you present just what you want, and the community doesn't buy into it, you know, you got to change to what the community wants. I mean, you know, that's why, like in a new restaurant, I don't know how many of your listeners are you know, just getting into it or a new restaurant or even an older restaurant, you know, just to go and check with your guests.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I want to get some like nuggets from your 3 years. Were you working in restaurants in Boston?
A little bit. I mean, I will call it my dark period.
Okay.
I bounced around to different jobs. I was not in a great place.
Okay.
Personally, you know, I thought that, oh, I get along with people and I work in the restaurant business. So I was like looking to buy a restaurant. I knew that I wanted to be in the restaurant business. We sold our house here. You know, at that time, you know, it was like 2002, we bought a house here. You know, the prices had skyrocketed, so we had some money, and I thought that we were going to use some of that to kind of buy a restaurant, but it turns out we mostly squandered it, you know, on stupid stuff. You know, money evaporates in my hands.
Oh,
you know, so, and you know, so I wasn't disciplined enough to really make that happen. I was working on it, like I had read books about how to buy a business with no money down, and I was looking. And, you know, one place I looked at, which is a little pizza shop, I ended up, the landlord wouldn't let me.
Wow. So what were your challenges trying to, like,
I didn't have enough money. I didn't have enough credit. I mean, you know, a landlord, you know, it's their building, and they want to know that whoever's getting in there is capitalized well enough to,
yeah,
you know, to cover them. And so anyway, long story short, my parents knew that I was looking to get into the restaurant business. And my dad was not going to invest in a business in Boston or in Massachusetts. He wanted, you know, if he was going to be an investor, he wanted to be
part of it.
He wanted to be part of it.
Yeah.
And it's turned out to be the greatest gift in the world to be able to be with my dad and, you know, really get to know him in a way that's different than a regular father-son relationship. You know, I hear all sorts of stories about families and difficult,
yeah,
difficult things. That hasn't been my experience at all.
Yeah, I say it's weird. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, when you're going into business with somebody, it has to be somebody you trust. Like, you can't partner with anybody. It has to be a special relationship. I mean, you're with that person more than your family and your partner in life, you know? You have to have that level of trust. And I sometimes wonder, like, who do you trust more than family? At least for me, you know? Like, if I'm going to business with somebody, I want somebody I can count on. And I can trust and count on family. So, like, I wonder if the people that say don't ever go into business with family, if you did, they just have shitty families.
I don't know that there's shitty families. So my dad had a background where he went into a business that was founded by his father and uncle. Yeah. And so he had a lot of those, you know, kind of difficult, you know, it's difficult when you're coming in and somebody else has their role. So my dad really understood the dynamics of a family business relationship. And as a result, I think he's been really great at it. For me,
what are those dynamics? Get into like what you he taught you about how to do business with family.
You know, I'm not sure that it's so much what he's taught me, just the way that when I have an idea or something that I'm pushing for, you know, he'll let me explore that, even if he thinks it's stupid, you know, and it might be. At the end of the day, I also defer greatly to his experience. You know, I understand that I don't know everything. I think there's a tendency to think that, oh, well, you know, to think that you know. I mean, you know, doesn't matter if you're a Yelp reviewer or, you know, somebody that's watched a lot of Chopped on TV.
Yeah.
You know, people think that they know food, and you can be a great home cook, but that doesn't make you, you know, able to work in a restaurant. I mean, you know, that people say, you know, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. And I think that that's true to a great extent. But I think if you love to cook, come cook on my line.
Right.
You know, it's not the same.
It's definitely not the same, for sure. So, I mean, it's what I'm hearing from you in terms of how to work with family is just open communication and kind of just giving each other a little bit of a leash.
Yeah, know, a long leash, yeah. And respect each other's opinions, yeah. And know that it's not personal,
mm-hmm.
You know, because it's not. You know, my dad has experience that I don't have, and I have experiences that he doesn't have.
Right. All right. I think now is a good time to take a first break to thank our sponsors. When we come back, I want to dive into what the first couple of years were like and how you did it and what you learned the hard way as you've been scaling.
Great.
Awesome. This episode is brought to you by Restaurant Technologies, Inc. RTI's Total Oil Management automates your entire cooking oil process. With Total Oil Management, you get dependable fresh bulk cooking oil delivery, filtration plus oil usage monitoring and reporting, easy oil disposal, used cooking oil pickup and recycling, and say goodbye to those messy, dangerous restaurant rendering tanks. Yuck. RTI's end-to-end cooking oil system helps you manage your used cooking oil disposal, storage, collection, and recycling conveniently, safely, and cleanly with no upfront cost. RTI's services are not limited to oil. They also provide insurance premiums and automated hood cleaning solutions plus hood filtration systems, making your hood cleaning process easy, automatic, and worry-free. In addition to all this, Restaurant Technologies, Inc. can help you reduce your carbon footprint, which we all know is becoming increasingly more important to the consumer. Restaurant Technologies, Inc. is always on, so you don't have to be. To learn more, head to RTI-Inc.com and let them know Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast sent you their way.
Restaurant Unstoppable Network is back, baby, and we're better than ever before. We already have 6 live events in the works, and we're just getting started. If you sign up for Restaurant Unstoppable Network right now, you can be a part of these 6 live events. We have Casey Anton, the author of Profit First for Restaurants, talking about profit first. We have Christine Miles, the author of What Is It Costing You Not to Listen? And it's costing you a lot. Tom Sterner, the author of The Practicing Mind, Fully Engaged, and It's Just a Thought, to help you get into that right mindset and to will your future into existence. We have Kathleen Wood, the woman behind One Thing, who's helped so many of our past guests focus and channel their energy to doing one thing really well. We have Mike Payton, the former chief visionary officer, or whatever title you want to call it, but he was the guy behind the Entrepreneurial Operating System, EOS, the Traction Library of Books. We're going to get him in the network to talk about EOS. And we have Dave Nitzel and Dave Domzalski, co-authors of The Bar Shift and Hospitality DNA, to talk about their findings in their most recent book, Hospitality DNA. We have a great lineup coming your way. And all you have to do is head over to restaurantunstoppable.com/whatever the episode number is. You'll find a link and a banner for RU Network. Click the link, get a 30-day no strings attached trial, and the first 50 people to sign up will get a free Restaurant Unstoppable t-shirt. And if you opt in to the annual plan, I'll throw in a Restaurant Unstoppable hat and a mug, but you got to act fast because these are going to go real quick, I have a feeling. And thank you for your support. We are back, and where we left off, you were talking about the balance, like working with your father and what that's like and how you think it, you know, family business isn't necessarily evil. And I kind of agree with you on that one. But take us to the very beginning. So you're in New York, you're in Boston. Your dad, you know, you're talking to your dad. Your dad wants to be a part of this. He doesn't want to invest in you in a restaurant if he's not there and if it's not in his city, right? So you and your wife.
I'll tell you, to interrupt you, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. You know, so we were looking to buy an existing business. And so first we found a business that was more like a sports bar. I mean, we looked at dozens, but we were close on this sports bar. And we brought their P&Ls to Jimmy, the gentleman we talked about before, and show them to him. And, you know, at that time in my life, I was a very heavy drinker. And he basically said, don't do it. And in the end, we thought, oh, well, we're going to do it anyway, right? And the deal ended up falling through because taxes that the, you know, all sorts of stuff. And so, you know, he said, look, if you're going to buy that, I'll sell you my rest and location. You know, it's kind of out of the way. We don't, it was really planned for us to do together to begin with. And so that's kind of where that happened. So I was still living in Boston. My wife was a high school biology teacher, and you know we bought it, his rest in Virginia location.
So was that restaurant when you bought it? Did you turn it to Gregorio's or was it
not right away?
Okay.
So we ran it. You know, my experience was running his concept, right? So I had worked as a manager and you know
what
cashier.
Was his concept? Italian.
Italian. Like, yeah. Italian. You know, it's the. You know, they're still around. There's, I think, 7 locations now, okay. All here in the area. You know, they've been very successful in other concepts and other businesses too. So, you know, so we ran a similar concept. You know, we tried to be, you know, improve the food wherever we can. You know, so my thing on like food costs or whatever, I'd rather keep my food quality up. And
spend a little more.
Spend a little more.
Charge more.
And charge a little more.
Yeah.
You know, not that we're trying to gouge anybody, but, you know, there's great.
Pay what you get for it.
Right.
You
know, I mean, there's great variety in what you, in, you know, ingredients. And we tried to, you know, constantly improve. And we still try to constantly improve the process that we use, I think, is different from what some other. So I don't want to know the price of your product until I've tasted it.
Right.
You know, so we do, you know, we'll sit down with my dad and I usually. And then, you know, kitchen manager, trusted manager, even some guests, if they're around, you know, we'll pull them in and we'll taste, you know, is it as good or better? And if we don't mostly agree that it's as good or better, we'll never find out what it costs.
Right.
Because it just, it'll change the way you think about it.
Right.
And, you know, like certain things, I just, you know, we're just not interested in compromising.
Do it
quality.
Because it's the right thing, not the cheapest thing.
Right.
Know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard because you're operating a business. And, you know, there are things that you might like to do that you can't really do. Like, you know, so if we wanted to do, you know, all organic, free range chicken. So we use an all natural chicken breast. They're fantastic. We use it. They come from a smaller bird and they're all natural. And that's great. But they're not free range.
Mm-hmm.
The free range is cost prohibitive.
Right.
You know, I don't think that. You know, my customer is going to be interested in.
I buy my chicken from this farmer down the street. I know the farmer. It's free range. All this stuff. It's $25 for a whole chicken, right? Like how
right.
many people?
Exactly.
And then you get a charge on top of it. Like, I mean, I get it. Right, so, I would love to see more people. I think I agree with the decision you made for your business. I just wish that the consumer would wake up already and realize what they're purchasing, how that affects the world, you know?
Right. Well, I think, you know, especially, I mean, chicken has gotten better. They used to do, you know, all the steroids and hormones, and there's rules now that there weren't 20 years ago.
Some regulations are good.
Right. So, you know, well, I mean, you know, anyway, I won't get into the, never mind.
Wait, but back to your story. So you were talking about, Jimmy, you wanted to do a sports bar.
So we wanted to buy it. And
he said no. And well, then was he afraid that if you got into a sports bar with the alcohol that you'd fall victim to, you get sucked in?
Absolutely. Okay. I'm certain that it would have.
So he was looking out for you.
He was looking out for me. You know, I didn't feel that way at the time, but I was, you know, would have ruined my marriage for sure. Right. You know, and you know, I don't think you can be successful if you're drunk at work.
No.
You know, and at that time, you know, now I don't drink. And that was, you know, because in my business, you know, you can't really, I can't. Some people can, and good for them. But I think it's just not something you should do in your business.
Got it. You know? So you take over Reston. At the time, what was Reston? What was the name of that restaurant?
So it was Mama Lucia of Reston.
Okay. And so you were you like under their umbrella? Did you own
not
the,
really.
Was it a licensing
so
agreement?
So we had signed an agreement that said that we wouldn't do anything to devalue the integrity of their trademark.
Okay.
Or their, you know, their brand or whatever the language was. But that was basically it. So we had no ongoing affiliation. Other than that,
so you're free to operate their brand. You could change recipes and do all this.
So, you know, when we got there, were no real written recipes. You know, so all this stuff that we do now with Restaurant Systems Pro, we had no idea. I had no idea. So when I worked as a manager, you know, I came in. I was there 6 days a week from open to close. I'd come in. I'd be the first guy in. I unlocked the door. You know. If they needed help bussing tables or making pizza dough or whatever it was, I could do those things. And I could, you know, get out on the floor and make the guests feel happy. And then at the end of the day, you count the money, you close out the credit cards and put the money in an envelope and leave. Right? So there was a kitchen guy that was placing all the orders. I had no idea what the profitability of the restaurant was or wasn't.
When you were the manager.
When I was the manager. So when I came to... at what was now our business, I treated it very much the same way. I didn't know.
Through the motions, but you weren't letting any of the data, the information, the cash flow steer and help you with like.
Didn't even know what the cash flow was at that point in time, right? So, you know, we knew what their P&Ls were. We knew what our sales were.
There are some things I'm curious before we start talking about, you know, really unpackaging your evolution as an owner. You worked with Jimmy for 3 years, and he was at this point. How long had he been in the industry?
A long time.
What was it about you? Out of all the people that he had come work for him, all the managers that he's like, okay, I'm looking out for.
I think
you,
it had to
Greg.
Do with his relationship with my dad.
Okay,
you know, my dad was kind of a mentor to him at that time. They were close.
Got it.
You know, and as a result of things that happened in our business, we drifted apart. I've recently reached out and reconnected with him, and you know, hopefully that's the start of a reconciliation.
He's had
a lot go on in his life. I've had a lot go on in mine.
So your dad was close with him, and he was kind of a mentor. So that's part of the benefit of having dad around is you're leveraging those relationships that he has too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I was curious about that. So you guys take over a licensing agreement. What was that like, the balance between what you were covering and your dad? Because you said he's not a silent partner. He's in it. So, like, how did you guys break that up?
Well, so at that time, you know, so he doesn't really – he's not in the operation of the restaurant, but he kind of – he's the
– paying attention to the numbers.
He's paying attention to all the numbers.
Was he paying attention to the numbers when you weren't? Is that
what
was going
on? He was, but at that time he was still working. So he had the company that – I mean, not to get into it, my dad – tried to be retired. That didn't work. He went back to work for the company that bought his for a short time. He didn't like being in a business where he wasn't the man.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, his whole career, he was the man.
Right, exactly. Know? So, you know, so anyway, that he left there at some point and, you know, and he's been more and more involved. And he's as involved now at 77 as he was 15 years ago. I mean, more involved now at 77 than he was 15 years ago.
All right.
You know, he kept his eye on the numbers, and the numbers were not good. The sales numbers were okay. You know, we always felt like we needed more sales, that more sales were going to fix our problems.
So top line was good, but bottom line,
Top line, I mean, it could have been better, but it wasn't bad. It was, it was good enough. We got to a point where we were making a little bit of money. I think that, I didn't realize it at the time, but what we were making because I was the owner-operator. I was there all the time.
You weren't paying a salary, and right. You had those relationships.
Exactly. If we were paying everything. A salary, there wouldn't have been any money left. And, right. There were times where there wasn't any money. I don't know how much of this I should, but my, there's a note that I owe to my parents. And there were months where I couldn't pay the note. I mean,
I'm not going to force you to say anything you don't want to say or reveal information you don't want to reveal. But I think it's good and it's important to be open and vulnerable to give people who are listening to this a realistic idea of like the real challenges. Like, be careful what you bite off.
Right. Well, it's been a real evolution. Right. So at that time, I was married. I had, no kids yet. And I was engaged in the restaurant. Really trying to put out a great product. But I wasn't, we weren't super successful by any means at that time.
When did you go from, it was Mama Lee, Licio,
was it Mama it? Lucia.
Mama Lucia yeah, to
Gregorio's.
Yeah.
So it was right around the time that we opened our second location.
When was that?
So that was 2013.
So 5 years after your first location.
5 years after our first location. And, so we're opening... the story of it is there was a gentleman that came into my bar in Reston. This is home, so I'm in Potomac where we are now. And
Reston was your OG location.
Reston was our first location. So when we bought the restaurant in Reston, I moved to Reston. Reston's an awesome community. I lived there for 7 years. I love it. I love the people there. I thought that I would stay there forever, right? So I thought that I had it all. I lived across the street from the golf course. I could, I was less than 2 miles to work. This was my world.
Yeah.
And I loved my little world. And then, there was a for lease sign on a former restaurant that isn't this location, but is another location. And so I knew the CFO for the landlord. He was my customer in Reston. And I said, hey, what's the story with what had previously been Celebrity Deli? I said, what's the story with the deli space? He said, well, we have an LOI there, but if you want, if you're really interested in the shopping center, we have an out clause with Umberto's. Umberto's was another Italian restaurant that's in the location where we sit right now. And apparently, at some point, they had gotten behind on rent, and the landlord agreed to forgive them some back rent in exchange for, I think it was either 60 or 90 day out clause, meaning that with 60 or 90 days notice, whichever one it was, I can't remember, they could force them out.
Yeah.
So we came in and we looked, and Umberto's was failing. I mean, it was a failing restaurant.
That's a lesson right there. If you're owning properties and you maybe, you have restaurants and you're leasing out restaurants to other people, like out clause. Oh, you're right. Struggling? Look, we're going to give you an opportunity to pay us back, but like we're giving ourselves an exit. If we're giving you this leash and time, what we want is we want the ability to kick you out if we have to.
Well, I also think that the lesson is that you don't know what's available. I mean, if you're just searching listings of what's available, you're not really getting the prime stuff. That's the stuff that other people have already turned down.
Yeah.
Right? That landlord, before they listed that space, they've, in all likelihood, reached out to other restaurant operators and said...
They want a path of least resistance before they have to do the work of listing it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so... So we said, okay, we're interested. We came in, and the place was a mess. It was but anyway, that's all beside the point. It had been a successful restaurant at one time. It had slid downhill for all sorts of reasons. I'm not gonna.
Yeah, you don't have to. Air out other people's laundry.
So we came in, and we went through the process of building out a restaurant for the first time, which is very different from buying an existing business.
Right.
I would recommend first time restaurant operators, not only, you should buy an existing business. It's a much easier process.
Oh, for sure. Well, I was going to mention that. It seems like this would be the second time in a row where your next location is already an Italian restaurant. So in terms of turnkey,
this wasn't turnkey.
So they pulled out all the equipment.
Yeah. So, well, they didn't pull out anything, but we did.
Okay.
So what they had was, where we're sitting now had originally been, I want to say, like a shoe repair shop.
Okay.
And they had at some point taken that over. And they never really married the space together. They had like a door that went between. They used it as like a private event space that was never really used. When we came in here, there were servers sleeping in it. I mean, it's, you know, it's a whole, you know.
Before thing. We really unpackage the second location, because when you open this location, you open it as a Gregorio's.
Right.
Was your original location a Gregorio's at this point?
No, we did them at the same time.
Okay.
So at the same, so we converted Mama Lucia to Gregorio's and opened Gregorio's here.
Got it.
Essentially the same time.
What happened at, I'm just going to call it Mama's, because I'm worried I'm going to say the last part. Lucia's?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Mama's. So back at Mama's, like what happened to, I'm assuming things must have turned around. You must have started moving the needle to become more profitable here in the place where you didn't expand.
We were profitable.
So what were the biggest points of evolution at location number one? Like what made you feel like you could go from one to two?
You know, mental illness. I thought that, you know, so we had, so my friend, you know, Martini, that we talked about before, who was our general manager here when we opened, died of pancreatic cancer, shortly thereafter. But, you know, he had moved to Florida and came back, and he was now living with my wife and I at our home, and he's the world's greatest restaurant manager, right?
What made him so great?
He just made everybody feel like they were the only they were the most important person in the room. Mm. You know, just the way he connected with people, the way that he spoke to people, and it didn't matter if it was the staff or the guest. You know, it was really made everyone feel so good.
How did you do that?
You know, just I think by, you know, from it just came from inside of him. You know, like he was so sincerely caring of other people, you know, caring about other people. He was just a really wanted to know people. He was just great. I mean, he could remember, he wouldn't always remember your name, but he always remembered
something about
you. But he would remember something about you.
Yeah.
You know, he could say hello in 100 languages. I mean, I don't even know if there are 100 languages, but, you know,
there are.
But he would, he would try to connect with people in a way that really made you feel special.
Mm.
And so he was with us in Reston, and he was a big part of making that turnaround.
So you're at Reston for 5 years before going to a second location.
Right.
So part of your scale there wasn't necessarily in the system or process, but at this point you're really growing and developing people.
Yeah, and part of it also was becoming a part of that community, right? So we moved to Reston. Now we're active in Reston in the community.
Do you have kids at this point?
No kids.
Okay.
I mean, I had my oldest son shortly after we opened the second location.
Got it.
So, you know, it was a strange time. So I just really wanted to continue to build our business, and we had this all star that, you know, had worked in this area, Potomac, previously, and I thought would be able to run this restaurant. And that I would stay
in rest.
I mean, you know, I would have both, but that I would be, you know, back and forth.
Divide and conquer.
Right? Divide and conquer. But that I was still planning on living in Reston. I now live here in Potomac, but I was planning on living in Reston, still being a part of that community. You know, my parents are here. My family is here. And also being a part of, you know, so I'm still a part of this community also. And I thought that would be great.
Yeah.
So every restaurant we've done, we thought that would be it. Right. So when we had one, we thought we would only do one. When we had two, we thought we would only do two. So that's where the shit hits the fan, is when we get into restaurant number two.
Okay. So before you get into restaurant number two, did you move were you better at paying attention to the numbers at any time? Did you ever put any energy
into the numbers were better.
The numbers were better.
The numbers
were
better
at understanding them, or like were
so
you...
So we had at that time we had a CPA who was a wonderful woman, but she did our work on the side. So we would get our numbers. So, you know, now it's January. I would get my January numbers in March.
Got it.
Right? So
there wasn't much you could do to pivot.
So we would look at our numbers and we would know that they were getting better, and, you know, and that was fine, and we were doing okay. You know, financially we were doing okay. I mean, we were doing well enough that we thought that we knew what we were doing.
Right.
But it turns out we only thought that we knew what we were doing. We didn't really know what we were doing.
Knowing what you know now and the operator you are today, what didn't you know then?
Like, so at that time, I didn't know everything that I got from Restaurant Systems Pro. So, like, my life, I mean, you know, I can't overstate the role that Restaurant Systems Pro and also being kicked in the face here. You know, so we opened this second location, you know, in September of 2013. We thought that it was going to be, you know, we unlock the doors and people are going to come. And that was true to some extent. So, you know, we did like a friends and family 2 days. And, you know, those people, you invite your friends and family. They come in, they eat for free. They give you all sorts of criticism. And then you don't see them as often as you thought you might.
Yeah.
You know, if I was counting on just my friends and family to support my business, you know, I would be out of business. So I just, you know, we opened and we thought we knew what we were doing. I had Martini, who was the world's greatest restaurant manager. We had a chef, Carmine, here. So Carmine really standardized our recipes. So when we took take a step back at Mama's, there were really no written recipes. You know, the ingredients are kind of listed in the menu. We had the recipes of the guys that stayed. But shortly after, you know, over the next few months, those guys all left.
Yeah, you know? So you're literally, at this point, a person or people-dependent organization.
Right.
If those people don't show up, the job doesn't get done because exactly. They are the process.
So we had to, you know, I had to learn to do all the stuff. I had to learn to cook on the line and to make salads. And, you know, I knew how to make pizza from my time at Mama's. But I just needed to learn how to do all that stuff because...
You might have to.
I might have to. Yeah. And I did have to.
Yeah.
So then we brought in and were able to develop and train a lot of our own people.
So just to kind of dial back, so you second location, 2013, you have your best friend. Was his name Martini?
Martini.
He was going to be the front of house. He was going to be the manager. He was going to run the show here, keep things in order here. You're going to stay back and resting. He gets sick. Unfortunately, passes from pancreatic.
Right. So it took a while. I mean, there was a whole process. So we had an assistant, you know, GM here who made it clear to me that, you know, he said that he could do more. I wasn't asking him to work any more hours, by the way. He could do more if I paid him more. And we were not in a position to pay anybody anymore. Yeah. And I was still trying to support my friend.
So your friend, from the time your friend comes and opens this spot with you and is going to be the lead on this location to when he starts to realize he's sick and he can't work, how much time elapsed?
So we opened September 2013. He was diagnosed in November of 2013.
Oof. So like immediately?
Yeah, almost immediately. You know, so it was a true nightmare.
I can imagine. I mean, this is also one of your best friends.
Yes.
So like not only are you dealing with your business that, you know, you had this plan, a strategy to support it. Your friend now needs your support, and you don't have the support in the business that you needed. So you're getting hit from both sides, emotionally in your personal life and in your business.
Right. And then the pizza guy went back to where he used to be. So now I'm making pizza, I don't know, 4 or 5 days.
And you had Carmine who came here?
Carmine started out, he was a sales rep.
Okay.
But he's Culinary Institute grad, really fantastic chef.
And was he working at Reston?
No.
Okay.
So he had done some like sort of side work consulting for us to try to standardize our recipes. And then when we knew we had signed a lease here and we were going to open, we knew that we really needed to standardize our recipes. And so Carmine came in and we went through everything and really, I mean, we really went through the menu one item at a time and we basically changed everything that we did to be standardized and to improve our product. We wanted to put out, you know, and we're a neighborhood Italian restaurant, but we want to put out world-class product.
Yeah.
You know, and so we did, that's what, when we did that. We went through and really tried to make
and
it.
And he was here on day one.
He was here. So Carmine was here before we opened actually, when the time came to open, Carmine tells me, we're not staffed well enough, we're not ready. And I said, well, we're going to start paying rent. So we're opening, whether we're ready or not. And we did.
Mm-hmm.
And we got run over. We weren't prepared to be open. You know, we weren't prepared to be busy. We were prepared, you know, if we had a handful of people, but we weren't prepared to just get slammed. And so the first few weeks, the community all came out. And I think that there's a group of people that they love to go to a new restaurant so that they can talk shit about it.
Right.
Right. And they're not going to try to like it. They're going to try to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you do your best to try to make them feel cared for. And Martini was the best in the world at that. And, You know, so after some weeks, I'm making pizza. Martini's now been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. He's got to go do that. And he tried to be here as much as he could. And he was here a fair amount. And he did it, you know, it took like a year for him to, it took 2 years before he passed away. So he had a period of remission, and then it came back to his liver. It's all a big, you know, it's a disaster. I mean, pancreatic cancer, any kind of cancer. I mean, like, you know, it's awful.
You mentioned there was this AGM that was willing to step up, but unwilling without the money.
Without more money. Yeah. And so at the end of the day, we parted ways with him.
Okay.
And so, you know, we were able to bring in another manager who was very decent. And you know, but we had to build it over time. So now we have one restaurant that's making a little bit of money in Reston and one restaurant that's losing money here.
How much were you losing money? How far into the black?
You know, I mean, it wasn't huge. You know, so between the two, we were making, I was making about the same as I was making in one location, in two locations.
Got it.
And, you know, I still had that idea, like so many people I think do, that, you know, you're going to open the doors and it's a great concept and you're going to be busy. And it didn't work that way. And we went to, my dad and I go to Pizza Expo. That's our annual shareholders meeting is in Las Vegas for the International Pizza Expo. So we went to Pizza Expo. And David Scott Peters, who, you know.
What year was this?
God. I'm really bad at that.
Were you at two locations?
So we were at two locations.
How many years would you say you were working at this
I'm
location?
I'm guessing it was about 8 years ago.
Okay. So 2000, this is where I'm embarrassed, 16?
Yeah, I guess.
So
about 2 years after we opened our second location, we're out in Pizza Expo. David Scott Peters speaks. My dad and I are in the seminar, and he says, you know, he's having a meeting in Phoenix, which is where I first met Fred, a couple of weeks later. And so I said, okay. My dad was like, you need to go to that.
Wait, so before this seems like a real pivotal point for you.
Oh, this is it. I mean, this is a huge...
The 2 years, I really want to distill the pain. The two years before opening your second location and coming across David Scott Peters in 2016. So you said the wheels fell off.
The wheels fell off. So I was taking me to
the worst of the worst, the pain.
We had, I had promoted a guy that was a bartender and a sort of assistant manager in our Reston location to be the GM. And then I was here managing and making pizza. All day and every day. And, you know, in Reston, I think they felt like I had abandoned them, you know, to some extent. Sales in Reston were sliding. Sales here were not enough to cover our expenses. And it was trouble.
Yeah.
And, you know, still we went to the Pizza Expo. We went and just kind of saw this thing where they said, okay, well, you know, what's your prime cost? And at that time, I had gotten into restaurantowner.com, and I was big into, what are the industry averages? Mm. And the thing that I heard from David that I didn't hear from was, you know, the average doesn't necessarily correlate to your business.
Right.
You know, it's what are these two things together, cost of goods and labor? What's your prime cost? I never heard the term prime cost. I mean, I guess I had heard it from restaurantowner.com.
But you didn't know what it meant.
But I didn't know what it meant. Yeah. And I didn't realize. I mean, there's so many things I didn't understand.
Right.
You know, we had recipes, but we didn't have the recipes costed out. So Restaurant Systems Pro, right? You cost out your recipes. They don't just sit the way that they are. You know, if you bring in cheese at $2 more a pound,
Everything over.
Everything in RSP changes.
Yeah.
Right? It updates itself. So we had costed out recipes the old fashioned way with Carmine, you know, who was a CIA grad and, you know, really fantastic chef.
They're menu cards, essentially.
Yeah, they're essentially menu cards.
Yeah.
So we have, you know, we have all this wonderful stuff, but it's not complete.
It hinges on one person understanding and knowing how to do that.
Now, I'll tell you, Carmine, who, you know, may or may not ever see this podcast, but I'm still in touch with occasionally and is a wonderful, wonderful chef and a wonderful guy. You know, the first night that we opened here, he's cooking on the line.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's like, this is where I belong. This is great. You know, within a few months, he was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't cook on the line every night. Okay. Well, you know, we really, so long story short, he had an opportunity to go back to U.S. Food Service, which is a previous employer of his,
yeah,
as a chef, and really help new restaurants to develop their menus. Great gig for him. He unfortunately left or lost it during the pandemic. I think his position was eliminated there. But, you know, really world-class chef. And I love what he did for us, and especially in creating some new menu items. I've never had somebody come to our business, whether it be a manager, a chef, that we weren't better off for the time that they were here. Things that they brought to the table that, you know, I really appreciate.
Yeah.
You know, even though it didn't work out.
He elevated you. Like, that's kind of how I feel when I was working with my videographer. Like, I had no clue what I was doing with cameras. I still feel like I'm still learning so much with these cameras. But when you surround yourself with the people who have the skills, it's like a crash course. You see, I think there's something about just learning through osmosis of being around it and seeing people do it and opening your eyes and just not even knowing what equipment to get. You know, like,
oh, right. I mean,
and they just know what you need, you know, and that will put you on a fast track. I think more people should open restaurants with strategic chefs that just help them get open, help them develop the recipes, help them set the recipes, help them build systems and process around executing the recipes. And then once you are on your own, like, you know, pay them for their intellectual property, yep, but exactly. You don't need to keep them on staff.
It's no, just I agree stupid, with that. Yeah. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
And then, you know, to bring in a you know, like a culinary, you know, somebody on the culinary side that really is fantastic. You know, and we have great guys here too with all sorts of experience from different places. You know, we have a kitchen manager in each place, but we've had a few chefs over the years that are, you know, true Italian chefs. I'm not Italian. I'm a Jewish guy.
You mean Khan's not Italian?
No, not, you know, Jews and Italians have teamed up well together yeah, for a really long time in a lot of different industries. You know, I love Italian food. I love what we do.
It's not to love.
So
for 2 years, you're really just, you're doing whatever you got to do to survive.
Right.
And you're in the, and things are sliding in not the right direction.
So the truth of the matter is when Carmine told me he was leaving, I was really grateful because
that's a huge expense.
It was a huge expense.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was like, okay, now we can break even, right? Yeah. And so, I mean, in Potomac. And so, and Reston was sliding backwards. And I was, I mean, I really felt like I was going home at night crying to my wife, like, why did I do this?
Yeah.
You know, we had one location. We were doing fine. Now we have two locations and it's all going to shit.
Mm. So, you go to Las Vegas, your annual investors retreat.
It's our shareholder meeting. Yeah. Our annual shareholder meeting.
And you see David Scott Peter on stage. At this point, Restaurant Systems Pro, what is Restaurant Systems Pro?
So Restaurant Systems Pro, I didn't know anything about it.
Okay.
Right. So
this
restaurants,
is 2018.
2018. So I go into, so I fly to Arizona.
Two weeks later. 2016. 8 years ago.
So I fly to Arizona a few weeks later. I sign up. Right, I come back and we're supposed to do like coaching calls.
What were you signing up for? What was it?
It's software package.
Okay, so then it was like a CD.
No, I mean I guess it was web based. I can't really remember. You know,
okay,
I'm not good at that. I'm very forward focused.
Yeah,
but the we got the program, but we couldn't really. So like to put in all the recipe costing cards is very different than the way we had it, right? So our recipes we had weren't batch recipes and then item recipes and different storage units and taking an inventory every week. We were like, whoa. So we started out the first year, we just used it for labor, right? So we had, you know, the most important thing to me. So like David preached in his, what I'm going to call sermon, recipe costing cards, sales forecasts, you needed a budget. We never had a budget. We had like, you know, this is how much we think we're going to do this year. And so this is kind of where we wanted to be. So when I came back, I started keeping an invoice log just on paper, right? So now it's all in the system. We scan the invoices and they go in and they go to each category and all that. But I started after that keeping a waste sheet, you know, so keeping track of what we threw away, and then having an actual sales forecast with a budget. So we said, okay, well, you know, if we're going to do, you know, $40,000 this week, we want to make sure that this is what we're spending. So I started keeping an invoice log on paper because I couldn't figure out how to do it in the system. So a year goes by. Maybe it was 2 years. I can't.
So remember. At the very least, he educates you on the things you need to be doing. You, right. For some reason, don't trust the software yet.
I can't figure out how to get it in there. I mean, I really.
But it's on your radar that you have to be tracking these
right.
things.
So I'm tracking it just on a piece of paper. I've got a clipboard over by the over by the walk-in. Invoice comes in. You write down the vendor. Fells Point Meats, and then how much it was, $730.
Got it.
And then I would add it up at the end of the week. Nobody else knew what it was. I would just – they would write it down.
Yeah.
And then I would go look at it and go, okay, well, we did good this week or we didn't.
Yeah.
In RSP now, there's an invoice log and there's a purchase allotment. And it tells you all about what you're doing. But
How much time elapsed from you adopting Restaurant Systems Pro, you were just using the labor management feature, and you were manually entering numbers on a spreadsheet? Like,
so
how long were you doing
a year
just
or
that?
More. I mean, okay. Somewhere between a
in
year
that
and
one
two
year,
years.
Just by tracking those things in your own way, in your own method, how did things change?
They all got better.
And how what degree?
To the point where we were able to bring in a new manager. I mean, other things happened, right? So this time I have a child, my best friend dies,
2 years later.
Yeah. So my son came, so we opened in September 2013. My son was born May of 2014.
Okay.
So now like my life is changing big time. And the guy that I was really counting on for this to be his store, and it was really abdication. So with Martini, whom I trusted and loved, I really felt like I could just say, hey, this is your store.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work out that way because of,
right.
God has different plans or whatever it is. So
I guess were you in the black at both locations after 1 year of going and implementing some big lessons from David Scott Peters?
Yes.
Okay.
In Restaurant Systems Pro, so we're now, we now have a target for our labor. We're making a schedule to a budget. But I still feel like we're nowhere near as profitable as we should be.
Do you remember what your margins were then?
I mean, at the end of the year, it was a couple of points.
Like you're doing 2 or 3 points
right,
at each
at
location?
At that point, I'm now able to pay our bills, pay the note.
The salary.
Right. Pay the note and pay the salaries. How much money was left over after that? It wasn't much.
Right.
So
that was, now we're, if we're looking at the timeline, the year is 2017. It's a year of, after your first, Restaurant Systems Pro meeting and you're implementing the labor management software. What was the next thing that you did differently?
So I get an email, I can't remember whatever it was, they were doing their what they used to do in Arizona, their soup to nuts seminar, where they go through every detail, every way that this program works.
Okay.
And so I said, okay, I'm going to that.
Okay.
So I went out there, and I'm watching, Fred is presenting and David is presenting, and they're showing you how the system really works. And Fred keeps saying, these are the results we're getting with our coaching clients. These are the results we're getting with our coaching clients. And I'm like, well, I want those results.
Yeah. So real big picture, we haven't really talked about where you're at today. So today, 2024, what are we at? 8 years later from when you start going to these seminars, you're at 4 total locations.
Well, so I've got 3 and 1 under construction.
3 running and 1 under construction right now.
And so, the fourth location should open, let's call it June 1st is kind of my target date, maybe late May, early June.
What percent profit are you doing at your restaurants?
So last year for 2023, 12%.
Okay. At both locations?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Or through all 3 locations,
yeah.
You say?
So the, it's not, that's kind of, some more, some less. That's my.
Your average.
My average.
Yeah.
The way that it worked for me was that we went and I said, okay, I need coaching. Right. Mm-hmm. And so Fred came to our restaurants, met with our managers and started training us and helping us to put in recipe costing cards. I've stayed with coaching all the way through.
Yeah.
So, at some point, Fred is not coaching anymore. Fred is the CEO. Gino comes in. Gino is coaching. So I've had them all out, several times. I can't go uncoached. uncoached, I become, you know, I kind of revert back. Now they do all sorts of online groups, and there's so many people that are so much better at doing that. I don't know if it's ADD or what. I can't sit on Zoom for any length of time.
I feel you, man. It's tough. No, I get that. So you go to this the soup to nuts. You see that there's elements to Restaurant Assistance Pro that are on the table that you're not leveraging to go from 3% to potentially 15% or 12%.
Right.
And then you know that in order for you to execute these things, you can't do it alone. So you opt in to have the coach come out and coach you.
Right. Now, the other thing about our percentages is we also have all sorts of people in there that, you know, so like I have an administrative assistant. I have an administrative assistant, a catering director, a director of operations. You know, so there's people that aren't on the restaurant level that are all a part of that. And so it's a much smoother, easier ride for me because I have so much support.
Got it. But when did like the needle really start to move? Like when you what elements that you weren't leveraging before, or the processes you started adopting that really helped you go from like 3 to 12?
So one was getting our recipe costing cards in their system, because then you can bring the data from your POS and know exactly what your cost of goods should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know what it was
versus right? actual.
And so number one is inventory, right? Mm-hmm. So a weekly inventory. So you don't know what your cost of goods are based on purchases, right? So, you know, it's beginning inventory plus purchases minus ending inventory is what you spent.
Right.
So if you don't have an accurate inventory, two accurate inventories really, you don't know what your cost of goods is. You know what you're spending, right? But I may not have gotten beer this week. So I think I had a really great week, but next week I get beer, I had a terrible week. Or, you know, last week I was way over, I bought a lot of cheese we didn't use. And
so it bounces out.
Right.
You're looking for the averages.
Right. So you get your cost of goods. If it's in inventory, it doesn't, you know, it counts the same as if it was in the bank.
Right.
So, you know, so if you're holding product, it doesn't negatively impact your food costs. Whereas when you're looking at just your purchases this week, you know, you're not really
accounting for what's on the shelves.
Right. So that's a game changer. And then when they added the invoice upload, which basically we get an invoice, we check it in, we take a picture of it, and it uploads to RSP. All the product is coded, so what's supposed to go to food goes to food. What's supposed to go to, you know, beverage goes to beverage. And it gives us, you know, so it's a living thing.
So you start going through these motions, and I think it's important too to point out it's not just the system that you're buying that's going to solve your problems. Along with adopting the systems and the processes, the technology, if you really want to move the needle in your business, you have to adopt new routines and new rituals, because you still have to do the inventory, right? You
right.
still have to go through, like, were you doing weekly inventories before this?
No.
Are you doing weekly inventories today?
Yes. So we used to do a monthly inventory.
Yeah.
And that was okay. But, you know, weekly inventory, it tells you today, you know. So, you know, here we go, you know, Monday through Sunday. So Sunday night, we take inventory. You know, Monday, I know what my cost of goods were for the last week. We enter that inventory. You know, we had an accurate beginning inventory, an accurate ending inventory. All the invoices are uploaded into RSP. We know exactly what we spent. And so, especially with like the highly perishable items, you know, to know, you know, what you sold and what your inventory is and, you know, how much you're spending, and to know to the penny, you know, every time a new delivery comes in or price changes, RSP sends out a daily manager log. And in that manager log, anything that I receive today that's a different price than it was the last time I received it, even if it's by a tenth of a cent, it shows up.
Mm.
So I can keep a really good eye on what's going on, you know, from wherever I am. I don't have to be here
right.
thumbing through the invoices. I get it right in my, you know, right in my inbox. Before I'm up in the morning, it's there.
You have the app too, right?
Yeah, we have the app too.
So, but like after going through these motions and exercising these new habits, the inventory, the, you know, the routines, the rituals, when did you start seeing the needle move?
Oh, right away. Right away. Right away. As soon as we started really counting the inventory, on a weekly basis, all of a sudden I knew that we had real numbers. The hardest part is holding the staff accountable, right? So I just instituted rules where if it's going to be more than $500 over budget for the week, you need my permission.
Yeah.
And,
that was my next question. Like, what are the challenges of you're basically rehauling your whole business? You're making your staff do things they never had to do before. If you don't have staff buy-in, if not everybody's going through this, it's not going to work. So how did you get them to buy in?
Well, I think that the staff bought in right away. So we had people that, they feel cared for here. They feel like they're a part of our extended family. And when we sit down and say, hey, look, this is where we need to be. I never hide the fact that we're, making money or not making money. I mean, mm-hmm. This is where we need to be to make money.
This is where we are and this is where we
right?
need to go.
I mean, everybody would like to make more money. I explained, I think, quite clearly to the staff, the way that we make more money is by controlling our cost of goods and labor.
Mm-hmm.
This is the tool that we use to do it. If we can hit our targets, then there's more money for everybody.
So when you started tracking these numbers, you just had this $500 limit. If it's been more than this, then you get approval. So it just forces you, where were you really just making more money? Like, where were the points coming from?
So the points were really coming from cost of goods. I mean, the once we really knew, that we were what we were really losing,
So what you were wasting?
What we were wasting, what was being overportioned, just certain things we weren't quite hitting on.
Got it.
So now, it's a few years, now as we've continued to implement more and more of this program, and I won't say that the program does everything because you have to run the restaurant, right? Hot food hot, cold food cold, people feel cared for, leave with a smile on their face, and that's the way I look at it. So in terms of the operation of the restaurant, we want to make sure that we make it the same way every time.
Yeah.
That, the hot food comes out hot, the cold food comes out cold. If we promise a carry out or delivery order to a guest, that we get it in the time that, that we promised it. And that everybody leaves with a smile on their face. They feel cared for.
Nice.
If my staff can make that happen and we purchase to budget, it's also really easy to hit your numbers when sales are growing.
Right. So if you're paying, if RSP helped you get control of what was going on in the back end, like the bottom line, how are things changing in the front line? What was going on there?
So, the front line here, we added
top line.
So the top line. So we started delivery. When we started doing delivery, this is, 2018.
Okay.
I'd have to really, so we started doing delivery, our own delivery drivers doing delivery. And I had always said, I don't want to do delivery because the product
Speaking of delivers.
Yep, here's the phone call.
They have officially opened if you guys are picking up on the noise in the background.
So it's snowing here today, and so people are calling to see if we're
ringing.
Open. it's 10:30. It's we're not open yet, but they're calling to see if we're open.
So you started doing delivery.
So we started doing delivery. Delivery really, helped us.
So now you're not limited by the amount of seats you have in terms of volume. It's unlimited volume.
It's unlimited volume. Yeah. What as much as you can push out, you can make. So the restaurant's small. It's 2,900 square feet. Everybody in a suburban neighborhood, at least where we are, everybody eats between 6 and 8, right? So in 2 hours, how many times are you going to turn over your seats? Maybe twice. It's the best you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a small bar, so you get that bar business. We do a little bit of catering, office catering, and stuff like that. But delivery and takeout, so delivery helped our takeout business, and so that built. I mean, significantly.
How did you build that? What things were you doing intentionally to let people know that you do delivery?
So first it was just to let within the four walls, to let all of our carryout customers and our dine-in customers know that we now deliver. I mean, we did some social media. We did some direct mail at that time.
Okay.
With Mail Shark. I'd give them a plug. They have a great program. where they do like weekly mailers.
Okay.
So instead of sending out, you know, all of your mailers right now, they're going to send it out over 10 weeks.
Those impressions.
To get those so that you don't just get run over.
Right.
Right. So if you send out, you know, hey, we're now offering delivery, however, $10 off your first delivery order, and you send it out to 10,000 people and, you know,
look out,
250 of them come in today, you're doomed.
Right.
But if you, you know,
drip it slowly.
So we did that. That was very helpful. We also added online ordering. Online ordering has been another great thing. Right. So when people search for delivery and they see that they can order online, I mean, for some reason, there's this huge group of people that they just, you know, they're
terrified of the phone.
They don't want to talk to anybody, you know, and that's fine. I totally get that. I mean, there's other people who are the complete opposite way.
Hello.
So we're here to do it. We're here to take care of you however we can.
Right. So what were you using digital? What did your digital front look like? Has that evolved since? Like
it has. So at the time that we first started doing delivery, we were getting faxes, you know. So we used a third party that was called Zuppler. I don't know that they still exist.
Okay.
It was before I had Food Tech as my order entry. So we had, when we started delivery, and the dates, I can't remember. You know, I know you ask years. I can't ever remember. But when we switched over to Food Tech, so there was a guy who has placed Potomac Pizza, Adam Greenberg, who turned me on to Food Tech.
Great for pizza delivery.
Right.
So now, do they have the features where you can find your drivers where they're driving around? Like
they do have that. I don't use that feature because for a number of different reasons. But, you know, it stores your last 60 days orders. It just makes it really easy for delivery. Whereas at that time, Micros, who we had previously, didn't have anything for delivery. So I would write your address on a guest check, staple it to the receipt, and the driver would go.
Food Tech was built for pizza, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's my understanding. Yeah. You know, so, you know, we're a full-service restaurant. We use them for the full restaurant's POS, but it was built for pizza.
Yeah, yeah. So you're using Food Tech. You have Zuppler on your digital front.
When we went to Food Tech, we integrated their online ordering at some point.
Got it. And where... when did the third location come?
The third location came during the pandemic.
Okay.
So
you opened restaurants during pandemics,
yeah,
man?
Yeah, I mean, it was... So the pandemic came. The pandemic was fantastic for me.
Why was it fantastic?
Because when it went to carry out and delivery only, we were already set up to do it. You know, people already knew that that's what we did, and people wanted to eat, right?
Yeah.
So when carry out and delivery only came... we were really in a position to take advantage of it. Yeah, we also did so much for local charities, schools, all those kinds of things that we were able to say, you know, post on social media, hey, look, we helped out all these charities over the years, tag them on a post and say, we could really use your help now. Because I thought at that time, carry out and delivery was about 25-28% of our sales. I thought we were going to lose 70% of our sales.
Right.
I mean, I thought we were going to go, you know, how are we going to do this? This was before PPP and all the stuff. I thought, oh, my God, we're going to not have any money. And it didn't work out that way. Our sales stayed steady and then started to climb.
Wow.
And then we had all outside seating. I had all these, like, camping heaters and heaters out there that, you know, were...
not to mention you're getting all these old customers to develop new habits with you. And I never experienced Gregorio's at home. Like now they're probably more likely today to order out with you than they were before.
Yeah, absolutely. They might even be more likely to order out than to come in because, you know, you don't always come into the place you order out from.
Right.
But there was a day, Mother's Day in the pandemic. That was the worst day of my life.
I mean,
you know, other than, you know, loved ones dying, but like in business. So we had run this promotion where we had a package for your family for Mother's Day, and we took so many pre-orders, and then we were taking orders on the phone, and we couldn't keep up with the volume of orders that were coming in. Online orders were coming in. I had so many tickets that people were showing up for their order, you know, to pick up their order, and, you know, it's been 2 hours, and their ticket is still on the printer. I mean, it was just a total disaster. We were unable to execute. By the time we stopped taking orders, it was too late, and it felt like the worst day ever.
Mm.
Uh, a woman went on Facebook and posted about how we ruined her Mother's Day. You know, and then the most amazing thing happened. What happened? So one, a lot of my customers responded to her Facebook post and said, you know, defending us. But the other thing that we did was, because it was carry out and delivery only, we had everybody's phone number.
Mm.
So my general manager, Chris Fargiano at the time, who was also one of our chefs that's passed through over the years, we started calling every customer. He started at the top of the list, I started at the bottom, and we just started calling every customer. Hey, we're calling from Gregorio's. You know, just wanted to follow up and see how you enjoyed your Mother's Day, you know, meal. And it turns out we didn't screw up nearly as many as we felt like we did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 that, okay, that really...
Out of how many orders?
That were them? Really unhappy. Oh, God.
Hundreds?
Hundreds. Mm-hmm. But it just changed the whole thing because, you know, people were so receptive to the fact that we reached out, right? How many calls do you get from a restaurant?
Not many.
Yeah.
And I think that's a perfect example of writing the end of the story. You know, it's what Danny Meyer calls writing the end of the story. Like, you're going to mess up. We mess up. It's inevitable.
Right.
You can't be perfect all the time. But you can use those opportunities to show your people how much you give a fuck. You know, like yeah, like, are you okay with messing up? That's not okay. Like, go show people and, like, own it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now is actually a really good time to take a break to thank our sponsors. And we'll be right back to talk about where you are and where you're headed. This episode made possible by Owner.com. Owner.com is the quickest and easiest way for your customers to order directly from you without the expensive 30% commission fees. Ugh. With Owner.com, you'll save thousands every month when customers order through your website and branded app instead of third-party delivery apps, and reward your customers with a built-in loyalty program that turns them into regulars who order again and again. Owner.com also helps you rank higher on Google with world-class search engine optimization built specifically for restaurants with an AI-powered website. We cannot forget lists. Build a huge list of people who live near your restaurant fast and market to that list on autopilot with text and email sent at the perfect time to help you grow sales and stay top of mind. Owner.com gives you everything you need to grow and market your restaurant online with no contracts or hidden fees. Visit Owner.com/unstoppable right now to book your free demo and see why thousands of restaurant owners trust Owner.com to power their restaurants online. Picture this. It's the end of the month and you're working your way through a shoebox full of invoices and manually entering costs into a janky spreadsheet that is being held together by bubblegum and prayers. And after hours of eye-stabbing tedium, you realize that your numbers don't even match. Oh my God. We've all been there. But it doesn't have to be this hard. Margin Edge can free you from spreadsheet hell. That's because Margin Edge is a complete restaurant management software that automates invoice processing and shows you your food costs and labor in real time. Just snap a picture of your invoice and Margin Edge takes it from there. Margin Edge will process your invoices automatically with line item detail and combine that information with sales from your POS to give you real-time reporting, including a daily P&L, up-to-date plate costs, and updated inventory count sheets. Stop spending hours to get numbers you're not 100% confident in when you could spend minutes and have accurate, real-time food and labor costs. Visit marginedge.com/unstoppable to learn more and to get a free monthly restaurant sales report packed with exclusive industry trends, data, and insight. All right, we're back. And where we left off, we were talking about where, you know, what the pandemic was like for you. I don't think you got into opening your third location yet.
So I'll tell you. So before the pandemic, we had signed a lease to open the third location.
Yeah.
That third location, we had done demo and started construction, and then everything shut down. So when that happened, the landlord was truly wonderful and came to us and said, hey, look, we'll push back your rent commencement date to whenever you open.
Yeah.
So that was nice. The two current locations, Reston and Potomac, were doing great, you know. So we went and said, you know, we were doing as well as ever, and we were doing it with less staff. You know, I mean, we did a great thing also in keeping our staff employed. So we made servers became curbside runners. So they would run outside, and because people didn't want to come in. They wanted you to bring their food out to their car.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So we tried to keep as many people employed as we could. I had delivery drivers. All of a sudden we needed a lot more delivery drivers. So what happened was, you know, we kept everyone employed. So when it was reopened, we weren't busy scrambling to try to find staff.
Right.
I know a lot of restaurants struggled that way.
Sure.
Because, you know, not a lot of people wanted to go back to the place that just let them go.
Yeah.
Even though
it was a 2-year period. So, like, you're going to wait 2 years for a new opportunity,
right,
or are you going to go fill the void?
Exactly. So they went out and found other, you know, so we kept everybody close. So, you know, our people, by and large, have made it through the pandemic with us. You know, even when it was outside seating only, you know, we took over because, you know, next to us is a bank and a Dunkin' Donuts. They don't do business at night. So we took over the sidewalk going up that direction. We just put more tables out. So we really had unlimited seating at some point because the rules were kind of loose at that time about, you know, where your patio seating was. I don't know if my landlord knows that I did that, but you know, it was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, to see the community support us and to really feel like, you know, they noticed that we cared.
Mm.
And so it was an amazing time, and we really grew so much.
How did this third location become an opportunity for you?
So the opportunity really came. So the landlord has an assistant who was our customer, and she came to us and said, hey, we have a space becoming available at the shopping center. Would you be interested?
So there's Potomac, there's Reston, and the third location is in?
The third is in Bethesda. You know, anybody that's local here, Bethesda, like downtown Bethesda has got 1,000 restaurants. This is more towards, like, it's what would we call Glen Echo. It's close to D.C. I mean, very close. So it's on Sangamore Road. So it's kind of a hidden neighborhood shopping center. But that shopping center, that street connects Massachusetts and MacArthur. It's like it's very convenient for a lot of people, but you have to know it's there to get there.
Yeah.
And they reached out and said, hey, we have this space available. Would you be interested? And, you know, just like with my guests, I don't like to say no. So I was like, well, you know, let's take a look at it. And we looked at it, and we made this, you know, really wonderful place. You know, so all three restaurants are really part of communities.
Yeah.
And being a part of a community, to me, is where the rewards are. You know, I mean, it's great to make a lot of money. You know, if you want to just make a lot of money, buy Bitcoin or whatever.
Do you remember what year you opened the third location?
2021.
2021?
Yeah, okay. So November of 2021 we opened.
Okay. So almost 2022, so that's a little over 2 years old.
Yeah. So I was just really glad to get to
almost 2 years old.
To buy all of our stuff and do that before.
What was the previous location there?
So there was a Chinese buffet there.
Okay.
So, you know, it was a previous restaurant. So every place has at least some infrastructure that we were able to reuse. You know, here in Potomac, not really. We didn't, you know, everything was just completely. So every time we build a new restaurant, and so now we're building.
Your fourth.
The fourth. So, you know, the first one we bought an existing restaurant. The next, now three, we've built out ourselves. It was so much easier just to buy an existing restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you have all your licenses, permits, whatever, everything is done. You come in and you know, I mean, it was just.
Yeah, I say it a lot. Be someone's exit strategy. You know, talk to people.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. I think we're afraid to go talk to people. Just go, you know, go into a community. Go to the restaurants that you admire. You like the location. You like the floor plan. You know, like you see the potential in it. And just put it out. Be like, hey, like if you ever want to sell the business, like I've been looking to get into it, and you never know. You know?
I think a lot of people fail because their concept failed.
Yeah,
and they weren't willing to adjust what they do. Right. So you know you have to be willing to change.
Right.
Right. I mean, if you opened, we don't have the same menu we had the day we opened. You know, if you do, you're going to, you know, there's things that don't, you have to constantly be improving.
I mean, would you believe that there's restaurant owners that want to get out of their restaurants?
You know, I totally understand it.
Yeah.
You know, but for me, like, the rewards are so great.
Right. And it's not for everyone, though.
Right. And I'm talking beyond the financial rewards.
Right.
That's nice, too. I mean, you know, it's nice to have nice stuff. But, you know, to be able to, you know, develop staff to where, so like now I have managers that, you know, so when I interview a manager now, I say, you know, if you want to make the most money, go, you know, I'm going to pay you competitively. Mm-hmm. But there may be other places where you can make more money. There may be other places where you have a little more flexibility. But if your goal is to own and operate your own restaurant, if you're here for 4 to 5 years, I will show you everything that you need to know to run a profitable restaurant.
Yeah. And maybe it's with you.
Maybe it's with me.
Yeah.
You know, I hope it's with me.
Yeah.
Right. So I hope that as we grow, those people can be partners in the next place.
Yeah. And I think that's the way to do it. Honestly, it's that mentality that like we go further together and I need to grow to give you opportunity. But by giving you opportunity, I'm receiving value from that. Like when we lift each other up, it comes back around.
Right. I mean, we've talked about like franchising, but I'm not, you know, while it would be great to sell 1,000 franchises like right. McDonald's or whatever, my goal is for my current staff to be able to grow into a role where they then open a Gregorio's franchise. So we're, you know, they're taking some risk and putting up some of their own, you know, hard earned money.
Yeah. What
but
is
that? It's kind of ours, you know?
So you'd use the franchise model where you would build out all the systems and give, you know, have the recipes, the branding, right. and they would become a franchisee.
Right. But I really want that to be people that have been with us.
Right.
Or, you know, or at least have, you know, and we're not there yet, and
yeah.
so I can't, you know.
The shirt that I'm wearing right now, Azul Latin Kitchen in South Lake Tahoe, I had Ray Villeman on the show. Actually, one of the other Restaurant Systems Pro users, Dan from Wally's, referred me to this guy. And he actually is, I didn't know until this trip that he is an investor in this restaurant as well. But Ray Villeman, man, like what they're doing, he was one of my interviews that really stood out. This guy's an all-star, but he was getting into like their model of it's a corporation. Like they're not franchised, they're a corporate I think entity. They own multiple restaurants, multiple locations, but the way that they're scaling is they're basically letting the people that they want to partner with, people that they've groomed and developed over time, they let them buy a percentage into the organization.
Well, I think that's thoughts great on that? I think that's great. My concern, you know, about continuing to is the guarantees on the leases, right? So, you know, the pandemic, you know, as an example, but it could be a natural disaster or whatever right. else, you know, if it's all a, you know, a corporation that's, you know, my family, every, you know, and we're unable to pay our rent because there was something, you know, I mean, we'll have insurance and whatever, but you never know how long it'll take insurance to pay or if the insurance companies will, you know, fail or right. whatever. However, all that will work. I don't want to be on the hook for 50 leases or 30 leases. Does that make sense? So I don't know. I don't even know if that's the way it works, but I know in our current leases.
You want to spread out the liability.
Right. So, you know, if.
And with a franchise operator, they're taking on the liability.
They're taking on that liability.
Okay.
You know, so whereas if it was, you know, if we signed all the and different, I don't know how.
But if you were a C corp or an S corp, wouldn't that entity take on the liability?
The landlords here, my experience is they want you to sign a guarantee.
Okay.
So if you don't, you know, if you don't pay your rent, they want to get paid. So I've also heard where then you can put money into an escrow account that they hold, or you know, so that as like a, but it would be a big number, right?
Right.
So, you know. And so I don't want to tie up money in. And so I don't know how all that works. I'm sure it can work differently in different mm-hmm. places. And I have a lot to learn there, too. I'm out of my depth here.
No, this is cool. This is like
but that's kind of my
when we get when I hit these types of opportunities, it makes me wonder maybe this is a good workshop. Maybe I need to go find that person that can talk us through these different things.
Right. So
but I also know it's state to state, too, which can be kind of hard.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, if I was a landlord and it was my building, I would want to know that I was going to get paid.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand that, you know, we do this together, you know, and we owe the landlord a great amount of, you know, their shopping center that they built and, you know, and oftentimes participate in the build out.
Right.
To give us an opportunity to be successful. You know, I would love to buy a building, but in our area here in the DC market, there's not a building that I can buy. That I'm aware of.
Yeah.
So
back to your future and where you are. So you're at soon to be 4 locations. Your dream is to franchise and grow internally, slowly providing opportunity for people within your organization to go. Do you want to bring Gregorio's nationwide? Do you want to be super saturated in the Mid-Atlantic market? Like, what's the vision?
So, you know, I think that we fit in a really niche kind of neighborhood. So like kind of a, you know, I just want to be able to serve communities. And wherever that takes us is to be determined. But right now, you know, so whether it's, you know, selling franchises that go to people that have worked with us, or people that have, you know, bringing our concept to people that are in a restaurant currently that doesn't work, right? So if you have a restaurant concept that, you know, could be Ethiopian or whatever kind of that we could, you know, you could become a Gregorio's franchisee and roll that into, you know, come in and rebrand and do some redesign,
right?
And, you know, convert that. I would love to do that. Yeah. You know, I really, you know, just like your mission to help restaurant owners, I feel that way too. I think that, you know, whether it's restaurant owners or really any, it's like, to me, owning your own business is the way to be. It's the most rewarding thing you can do in life. It's great if you can go to work for the government and get your pension and, you know, benefits and all that. But, you know, it's, to me, it's almost like being an artist where you get to look at, you know, your creation. You know, we've built this business and it's really, you know, this is my legacy. This is something that will, you know, ideally provide for my children. And, you know, whether that's by exit or by them coming in, you know, right now I've got 3 kids and soon I'll have 4 restaurants. You know, does each kid want a restaurant? I don't know what they,
right?
I mean, they're 9, 7, and 4 and they're incredible. But you know, I don't know what they're going to choose to do, but
right.
I know that this is really rewarding for me,
mm-hmm.
and whether it's this business or whether, you know, any kind of business,
yeah,
I think is so much more beneficial to go to work in a business, put your money aside,
right?
And then, you know, there's programs with the SBA that if you buy an existing business, you can do, you know, things that you can't do trying to lease a space.
So like what?
If you're a new restaurant operator and you want to sign a lease here where you're with the, you know, where we're sitting, you know, these companies don't want to sign a lease with a new restaurant operator. You know, the landlord wants somebody that's got experience in running and operating restaurants. But if you buy an existing restaurant, the SBA will, my understanding from, you know, I'm not an SBA lender, I'm not affiliated with any bank or whatever, but you know, the SBA will finance a big part of that, so it's really a great opportunity for so many people.
Yeah, and I think I should probably look at the SBA. I sometimes forget that, like, I'm a business of 10 years, you know, like with my scale, I always forget them as a resource.
You know, so you can buy an existing business, and then you can convert it.
Yeah,
right. So if you bought, you know, when we bought an existing business and converted it to Gregorio's, we didn't borrow from the SBA.
But did you know you could have?
I had no idea.
Yeah.
It's all stuff that I, you know, you learn
this
later.
This is the stuff I love to get. It's the little nuggets that you just don't know until you know. And like, I wish I had, if I had known this.
Right. Yeah. So I didn't learn anything about the SBA until the pandemic.
Right. Kind of forced that one
on us. So, you know, they came, you know, but they do so much to help small businesses. And if you open in certain areas, you get other benefits. And I'm not an expert in any way, but to be able to go. And
maybe, I wonder if the SBA will sponsor my podcast.
You know, it's a good question. You know, certainly a lender would.
Right.
Right. So the SBA guarantees the loan, kind of like the student loans go, I think. But if you're going to borrow money, borrow it to buy a business, not to go to college.
Plenty of incentive for them to sponsor my podcast. Think about my target audience. You
right.
know? Like,
no, but to me, like, if you could buy an existing business, you know, for me, it's the restaurants because I love doing this.
And, yeah.
You know, it's, you know, you don't have to be a certified plumber or whatever. You can, you know, all you need to do is know how to be nice to people.
And a desire to constantly learn and grow.
And be willing to continue. Mm. Right. So the first year, you know, I talked about when we opened the second location, how everything felt, you know, how it feels isn't always real.
Yeah.
You know, the way that it felt was we're dying. Well, the truth of the matter is it's going to take 2 to 3 years. You build your business one guest experience at a time.
Yeah.
You know, guest comes in, they have a great experience, they come back, they bring a friend, they tell a neighbor, you know, new neighbor moves in, they tell them to come in. So, you know, yeah, we do some marketing and whatever, but, you know, we really, the business builds one satisfied guest at a time.
Yeah.
So it doesn't happen the day you open your doors.
Nope.
And, you know, people buy a franchise or go and open a business from scratch, and doesn't matter if it's a restaurant or something else, they open their doors and they get a little bit of press, you know, send out a press release. It gets covered here and there. most people aren't paying attention to that stuff.
So I am curious, before we start to wrap up with the final questions, like, what do you think the future looks like? Like, what are you doing in your businesses today to evolve today to be ready for tomorrow?
So I got to tell you, I think the future is so great.
Why?
Because there's so much opportunity in technology to really get to know your guests' habits. You know, I was at a restaurant not long ago, you know, where the wine list was on a tablet, and you could sort by price, and you could sort by, you know, so like, as I think that the future is a tablet menu, and, you know, like, I look at it like, how can we better serve, right? So that way the guest can say, oh, I have a dietary restriction, and then the menu will populate just what.
It's essentially a mobile kiosk.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, you'll sit down at the table, you'll be served by a server. It's like, I don't ever want to get rid of my servers. Those, you know, that connection to the guest.
Answer questions.
But a lot of questions, people trust what's there on the tablet more than they trust what you tell them.
There's an older generation of people who don't like those things, but they're somehow, I don't understand why, but there's fewer of them as time goes on.
Yeah, well, I think that as they actually experience the technology, it gets better. You know, they get more into it.
There's that, and I think they're just, you know, like, they're just kind of going away slowly with time.
Well, that's true, too.
Like, literally.
I mean, time is undefeated, right? I mean, time heals all wounds right up till the moment it kills you.
Right. And like, and there's the slow adopters, and eventually they'll adopt it, right?
Absolutely.
But there's, to your point, absolutely right, that, like, you know, you look at some of these quick service operations or the fast casual operations who are really embracing the kiosk ordering. So you walk in and you're faced with a kiosk, and there's an option to do a person checkout if that's what you want. But the majority of the people are going through the kiosks, and the kiosk won't miss an opportunity to upsell.
Right. So the kiosk won't miss an opportunity to upsell, but it's also, you know,
The data points.
Yeah. So I know what you liked.
Yeah.
I know what you had the last time. I know exactly the
now
way
you can segment them.
Right. So I know
who, speak to them specifically.
I know who you are.
Yeah.
You know, and not that I, you know, so it in a better way, in a deeper way in that sense than I could possibly.
Right.
You know, I know the last time you came in. I know when your birthday is. I know when it's your anniversary. I know that you're, you know.
Yeah. You know, you're mentioning, you know, you're looking, you're exploring new digital. I wanted to mention to you yesterday when we were giving you feedback, because you're at four locations and I have a feeling you're going to be at five sooner than later. I think you're in a, you know, and I don't want to give you public referrals, but I think Olo, because of all the things we're talking about right now, have you looked into Olo?
So I've a few years ago, I stumbled on Olo. There was an audiobook that I listened to about, you know, the future of, you know, dining. And it was all about delivery, right? And that was during – so I consume audiobooks all the time. So I can't even remember what it was called. But it was a, you know, about the future and delivery. And delivery is a huge part of the future because, you know, people want an experience. And a lot of times that experience is I don't have to stop – the movie that I'm watching or the video game that I'm playing or the experience I'm having at the pool or the club or whatever it is to go get food. I want it to come to me. And, you know, so that's a huge, you know, thing in the future that will continue to be delivery.
Yeah.
But there's still something about a gathering place, you know. So to come to the restaurant and be a gathering place is still...
Yeah, I think you're a good candidate for Olo. I think check out the episode I did with Noah Glass, the CEO of Olo, and they started as digital ordering, right? Online ordering is, you know, how they started, and now that they're getting all, to your point, all these data touch points, they want to evolve and have the ordering experience spill over into the in-house experience. So they've mastered digital, but now we're at this weird point where the digital is starting to bleed into the four walls because people prefer to order digital. So like the habits that they're using to order out of the restaurant are spilling into the restaurant.
Well, I mean, even just paying at the table. So how much of my server's time is spent inputting an order, you know, that they can now do on a tablet at tableside? Or you could do it yourself.
Right. And you'll probably be happier because it's getting to the kitchen faster.
It's going to get to the kitchen faster.
And if they fuck up the order, guess who's on the
order? Right. But to be able to hit a button that says, I want it, you know, I want attention.
Yeah.
I want my server to come to the table, or I'd like to talk to a manager. And for that to then, you know, alert me on my phone.
Yeah.
I don't know that's anybody does that. But I wanted to be able to say, you know, here we need something. I want another drink.
Right.
Right. We need another drink. Server's over two tables down taking an order. I want another drink. I can order another drink, and it goes to the bar,
right,
and the drink comes back out. So my needs are met faster.
The throughput there. Now, if you tie that sort of thing with, you know, cocktails on draft, yep, you know, you're just the throughput, the volume is next level.
No, you're 100% yeah, right. And so I don't think that there's, you know, a real replacement for people, but I think it's an opportunity to really improve the experience.
Streamline.
And then also, you know, you have a server that now has to go, you know, run your credit card. You know, so you're waiting for your check. They deliver your check. You know, we do have pay at the table, so you can scan a QR code and pay from your phone. But that's just, you know, it's not been that well adopted because you still have to present the check.
Yeah.
You know, if I could.
And is that through Toast?
No, that's through Food Tech.
Oh, Food Tech. That's right.
So if you could, you know, and that's great. But if you could really do that, manage that whole experience that way, which I think is the future.
Yeah.
You know, so I really loved that, you know, when we went to this place that had the wine list on the tablet, that you could sort by price, you could sort by region, however you wanted it is how you could get it. You weren't limited by what the server presented to you.
So if the mission statement is to inspire, empower, and transform the industry, what is the future that you think, like, what is something that you think needs to change about the industry? Something that you don't like about the industry, that if we create awareness about this and we collectively make an effort to move in this direction, it would be better for everybody.
So the biggest issue is the job hopping, you know. I think when people have a tough day or week or month, they start looking for where can they go.
To escape.
And when new restaurants open, it always seems like it's a shiny bouncy ball
around
the corner. You know, I just think people need to be more open to conversations. Like, hey, I'm having a hard time. You know, so, you know, nobody wants to have that kind of difficult or deep kind of conversation. So your staff, they'll quit, but they won't come to you and say, you know, this is the issue that I'm having. And my front of house staff, I've had a lot of the same people for a really long time.
What can we do to decrease the odds of that happening?
Well, that's a good question. So I just think that opportunity for advancement, I think there's a lot of feeling within our industry that there's not a lot of that.
Yeah.
Right? But I really believe that everyone, anyone, if I can do it, anyone can do it.
Right.
Can advance to ownership, multi-unit ownership, given the right tools,
right,
and it's incredibly rewarding.
100%, and this is why I think the restaurant industry has the ability to change the world, because we get to work with such young people, such impressionable people who we forget maybe they don't have the soft skills and know how to communicate what they're feeling. So I think part of the solution, to your point, in creating a future where we can prevent less jumping around, is being mindful of creating a safe space where we can let our people know, if you're not at a 10 today, if you're at a 7 or 6 in terms of your happiness or like whatever, let us know. Like, and here's how to let us know, and like open the door for communication and make sure, like, I think it's we forget that it's our responsibility to give the next generation these soft skills and to teach them how to communicate.
Well, I think there's a lot of, you know, if you don't do this, you're fired,
right,
and if you don't do that, I'm going to quit. You know, I don't do that.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's really, you know, you treat people the way you want to be treated. You don't take out your frustration.
I smell mushrooms right now. Starting to get starting to smell. Yeah, sorry, totally distracted. Yeah,
that's
you continue your train of thought.
So, you know, so it's
sorry.
It's okay. It's all about, you know, just making people feel cared for. People don't leave a place where they feel cared for. When they feel like they're being pushed around and bullied.
Yeah.
You know, and I've worked in those places too. You know, I think the old school way was, you know, my way or you're out of here, you know. You know, your servers line up. If your shirt isn't perfectly pressed, go home,
right,
you know, that kind of thing. And, yeah, you want everyone to kind of, you know, hit your target. But it's not, if you don't do this, you're fired.
Right.
It's like, hey, help me understand why, you know. So, like, I heard somewhere, you know, there's only two reasons why they don't do something. It's either they don't know or they don't care.
Right.
And so first you have to show them. So when they don't do
you have to assume they don't know first.
Right. So first you assume they don't know. And I will assume that they don't know three times. And then if they continue, like, so once they've shown that they know, they've done it once or twice.
Now you know that.
Now
care.
You know that they know. Yeah. And if they don't care, you know, you say, hey, I feel like, you know, I know that you know how to do this. You know, so my understanding is that or my feeling is that you don't care about getting this done, or you don't see the value in it.
Right.
So sometimes when we say you don't care, it's really they don't see the value.
Mm, they don't understand why. Right. They don't know the why behind it.
Exactly. And if you just sit down and explain them the why, instead of, you know, I'm not looking to fire anybody. I look at it like when you come to work here, you've made a commitment to me and I've made a commitment to you.
Yeah.
And we're in this together. And I want to help you in whatever it is that you need as a human being to, you know, to continue to develop in your life. If your goal is to own a home, I want you to own a home. If you want to move into management, into a salaried position, or if your goal is to own your own place, I want to be a stepping stone on your path to there.
Yeah, man.
You know?
Dude, I've loved today's conversation. I can't believe we're almost at 2 hours of recording.
Wow.
I think maybe it's a little over 2 hours.
You know, I thought two hours was going
to
be wow.
Can you imagine just trying to do this in an hour?
No.
It's not possible.
No, this has been fantastic.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I love it, man. I feel very fortunate to be able to do what I do. You've been a great guest. So I want to ask a few more, you know, standard questions before we wrap up. And the first one is, what is one thing about your business, a value, a process, a system, something that's truly uncommon about what you do here that makes you unstoppable?
So what makes me, well, I won't say me because it's really not about me. It's about we. Yeah. Unstoppable is really just the level of connection with the staff. So my feeling is that I show care to the staff shows care for the guest.
Mm-hmm.
I show care for the guest too, of course, but you know, I believe that my internal guests, my staff, needs to know that I'm on their side. I care about them. I care about their family, their kids, their mother, their sister. You know, I want to know within my abilities, how can I help you to have what you need?
I love that. And if the mission statement is to change the world through inspiring, empowering, and transforming the industry, how have you personally transformed? I think the way we're going to transform the industry is transforming one owner at a time. So who are you today versus the man you were when you got started in this industry?
So when I started as an owner, I really felt like the world was a party and I was the host. You know, so I just wanted to make sure everybody had a good time. I didn't know anything about the numbers of it. You know, at the end of the month, we would just look and see, do we have any money left? And now I'm a real competent professional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, are there people that are more competent? Yeah, absolutely. But I am a competent professional. I know my numbers. I know what my numbers need to be. I know that because of RSP. But I know that, you know, hey, today it's snowing. If we're going to be slower, I need to get people off this schedule today.
Right, right.
You know, I know exactly what my labor cost is, and you know, and it's not me saying, hey, you know, go home. I'm going to reach out to them and say, you know, hey, the roads are icy. You know, stay home, stay safe. You know, get some rest. We'll see you tomorrow.
Right.
And you know, to be able to communicate in a caring way, and not let my, you know, I used to let my personal, whatever my mood was, really impact my communication with other people. I try really hard not to do that now. I have a few really close people that I can vent to, and I feel like I need to do that before I can communicate clearly to somebody else.
Right.
But I try to really focus on being present and kind in my communication with especially my staff.
Yeah. This next one's a doozy, so get ready.
All right, I'm ready.
If you got the news, you'd be leaving this world tomorrow. All the memories of you, your work, and your restaurants would be lost with your departure. With the exception of 3 pieces of wisdom you could leave behind for the good of humanity and your legacy, what would those 3 pieces of wisdom be?
Own your own business.
One.
Two, the second one would be just to you know, it's a simple one. It's just to treat others the way you would want to be treated.
The
be
golden
kind.
Rule.
I mean, that's it. I mean, that's really the most important thing. And, you know, to really... To just show care and love for what you do. And you know, and by that I really mean like if you're making a pizza or you're cooking a chicken piccata, to really put your heart on that plate, to really make it exactly the way that it should be presented, cooked the way that it should be cooked, just because anything, you know, if you're gonna do it right.
Yeah.
You know,
this has been a lot of fun, man.
You know, because fast and half-assed is how I used to do everything. You know, when I was young, fast and half-assed was really my...
I think that's a good way to start, though, because I think you just want to start and just don't let wanting to master it out of the gates hold you back from ever starting. I think you just have to start and pivot and slowly shift from going fast to slowing down.
100%.
Because if you try to master everything out of the gates, you're not moving fast enough.
Well, no. And so many people try to get a perfect business plan or perfect business model before they start. And then when they get hit in the face and find out it's not perfect, they want to leave.
Yeah.
That's just not the way to do it. The way to do it is to go and change.
I mean, one of the biggest lessons I've learned is that there is no right answer, and that a right answer in this moment of time will have a completely opposite answer that's also right at a different moment.
Yeah, I feel different. I feel like there are a lot of right answers.
Exactly.
You know?
And usually whatever is right, there's constantly countering advice. Like, one thing I hear a lot on the show is say yes to everything. And then in the same week, I'll talk to somebody that says, be careful about overcommitting and really be selective about where you put your energy.
Right. But you can say I can't, which is different than no to me. Right. So if somebody says, you know, can I get a taco?
Right.
You know, oh, I'm really sorry. I wish I could serve you a taco, but we don't have the ingredients to make it here.
Right.
Let me recommend you to some place where you can get a taco.
Right.
That's different than saying no.
Exactly.
You know,
but I mean, in that example that I gave with like say yes to everything versus, you know, in terms of your career, like if people come to you and they have an opportunity, say yes. This,
right.
Eventually, like early in your career, say yes to everything. Because you're looking for opportunity.
Right.
But once you figure out what your lane is and what you're doing and your identity, I think you have to start saying less yeses and being more intentional.
I'm going to, you know, there's places where, you know, you get an opportunity on a restaurant space and they say, oh, we want to have you in our shopping center, but this is the rent.
Mm.
And you say, well, I really, you know, I don't say no. I say, I'd really love to do that, but I can't do it right now.
Right, right.
You know? Mm. And so, you know, I don't say no. I say, we can't do that today, or let me recommend you to somebody who can. I really try not to say no.
Mm. So before we say goodbye, I do want to have you call somebody out. This is really what I'm trying to have be my North Star. I'm trying to have the industry steer the ship of Restaurant Unstoppable. I want it to be organic. I want it to be raw. I want it to be journalistic. So who do you think I should talk to? If this person was a guest on my show, you'd be like, you got to absolutely, I want to listen to what they have to say.
Oh, Adam Greenberg, Potomac Pizza, and it's Potomac Pizza, Bagels and Grinds, Hunter's Inn, different restaurants. Adam has been very helpful to me in my career, and also, you know, Jimmy Fragianis, who's, you know, I used to work with. And, you know, so those are two guys that are definitely worthy of a shout out.
Adam, Jimmy, look out. I'm coming after you guys. I'd love to get you on the show. And how can we connect with you if we really enjoyed today's conversation? Maybe we're in the, you know, Mid-Atlantic area, and maybe we want to come work with you. Maybe our dream is to open a restaurant someday, and you could be the person to help us do that.
So you can contact me through Gregory@GregorioTrattoria.com.
All right.
This is my email. You can go to the website and contact us. I get all those, too.
Social handles you want to throw out there?
So I've kind of semi-abandoned social media in the last, you know,
I can't
year
say
or so.
I blame you, man.
You know.
Well, this is episode 1058, so head over to restaurantunstoppable.com/1058. We'll have Greg's email in the show notes, so if you can't remember it fully, we'll have just remember that number, 1058. We'll store it over there for you, and this is where I say, man, thank you so much for taking the time
thank you.
To share your story, to open up your restaurants to the greater Restaurant Systems Pro community, and to let me record yesterday with Matt Burnaby with Urban Hot Dog. We got to talk to him yesterday. You helped us with the space to do that. So there is no questioning, my man. You are unstoppable.
Oh, thank you. I feel like you're unstoppable
thank
too,
you,
Eric.
Dude.
Thank you.
I appreciate
it.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
There's another episode wrapped up here at Restaurant Unstoppable. Special thanks to our guest today, Greg Collin, for coming on, sharing your story, getting vulnerable and inspirational. This was awesome stuff. And, you know, I have had the privilege of getting so many perspectives, and there's a million and one different ways to run your restaurant. But what I'm starting to learn is that there is no one way for sure. What works for other people, it doesn't work for everybody. And after interviewing 1,000+ restaurateurs, you know, I feel like I have to get to this point in my career as the host of Restaurant Unstoppable and as this person who set out to learn and to get perspective and to develop a strategy for his own vision, his own dream. if I was opening a restaurant tomorrow, what would I do? What tools and services would I go to? And as of March, we are going to go public with what Eric Cacciatore's plan is if he goes from zero to five restaurants in 5 years or less. We're going to cover people. We're going to cover process. We're going to cover promotion. And we're going to cover personal growth. And it's going to be a six-month-long journey where we go through these different buckets. And I'm going to bring you, my listeners, to the people that I'm going to if I'm opening a restaurant and going from zero to five restaurants in 5 years or less. So I'm really excited to announce that. Stay tuned if you're interested in joining that mastermind. Again, it's a six-month-long coaching program. I'm going to be covering the topics of people, i.e. culture, and personal growth. And I have some strategic partners. And if I bet you can guess one of them. And this company is a company that has really just impressed me over the past couple years developing this relationship. I've gotten the testimonials. I've done my research. And I think I'm going with Restaurant Systems. I know I'm going with Restaurant Systems Pro if I'm going to open a restaurant tomorrow. So we're partnering with Fred Langley, the CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro. And he's going to cover a process. We're going to go deep into process, all the systems. He's going to be teaching that. And then we're still looking for our promotions partner. The verdict is still out for me in terms of who I'm partnering with and on my world of marketing and promotions. So stay tuned for that. But some big things happening here at Restaurant Unstoppable. Our new website is live. Head over to restaurantunstoppable.com. Check that out. And thank you in advance. We'd love your feedback. And I just want to say a special thanks to Jared Parisi for all the hard work that you've been, you know, a huge part of Restaurant Unstoppable over the past 10 years. And I wouldn't be able to do what I do without you in the background putting things in place. And also special thanks to our new community manager, Callan Miola. This lady is taking the bull by the horns and tackling Restaurant Unstoppable community. And I could not be more lucky to have a woman like her take the initiative on leading Restaurant Unstoppable community. So awesome things happening. 2024 is going to kick ass. I can't wait. Stick around. You're in for a treat.